We've got a bunch of people here.
19 February 2014 HDT meeting.
Thanks, ODFW, for supplying the room. We were trying to get web meeting working, but not super successful. But it's probably okay because Chris Walker, either Chris or me, had sent out a number of items to you guys. Just a couple things: the agenda, previous meeting notes. I think I also had emailed out the notes from that Summer Steelhead meeting that took place in July, so quite some time ago, for folks to review. The one and only handout we have that hasn't been distributed is something that Cameron provided to me. So we'll probably just walk through that. What I'm trying to say is if you just rely on the material we sent you, sounds like web meeting will not work, but at least we've got a conference line going. Having said that, it sounds like there's a lot of folks on the phone. But we're going to go around the room here real quickly, introduce ourselves, and then if you guys can, on the phone, introduce yourself as well. So this is Dave Lenhart.
John Thorpe, ODFW.
Cam Sharp, ODFW.
Bob Wertheimer, Corps.
Tammy Mackey, Corps.
David Griffith, Corps of Engineers.
Tom Friesen, ODFW.
Bernadette
Graham
Hudson, ODFW.
Mark Johnson, ODFW.
That's it for this room. Who's on the phone? Please.
Hi, this is Lance Kruzek, Nip.
Dan Peck, William Hatcher.
Sarah Bjork, ODFW, Michelle.
For Kramer's Mackenzie Hatcher.
Eric Wilhelm Lieberg, Hatcher. Grand Grand Member Marion Porcimento.
Chad Helms, Doug Garlis, Willamette Valley Project, Corps.
Jim Myers, NIP.
Sounds like a full house. All right, hey, great, thank you guys. What I've got up on the board here is our agenda. And the meeting is scheduled to go from 9 to noon. We core folk have to be out of here by noon because we have to be back at our office for a mandatory meeting by, I think, 1 o'clock. On the agenda, first thing I've got is introductions, which we just did, and to go through the December meeting notes, followed by we've asked to get folks together to talk about FY14 research needs, coordinating those 15. Research needs with hatcheries and the adult fish facilities. I've added a little bit of my own language in there. I said, Cameron Sharp had sent a handout to me where he tried to summarize a number of those R&E monitoring needs that would require coordination with the facilities, so we'll walk through that. We also had on the agenda earlier when Chris first put this together was we were going to go over the Creel survey results, and I'm still a little bit unclear. It sounds like those aren't, and for the summer steelhead work, and I'm not sure those are available still at this point. If they're not and we can't talk through them, I put in a substitute for fish health because Sarah's on the phone, and she had actually sent me something to discuss sort of the status of fish health facilities. In addition, we've got some items to discuss regarding summer steelhead, off-station release plan for 2014, because I think a number of us have heard that might be modified, if not terminated for 14, not sure. We wanted to talk through some of the steelhead recycling results, and I know Chris Caudill's on the phone. And is he only going to be on the phone this morning?
He's available this morning. I didn't hear him on the phone yet, so I got his number up. I could quick call him if we want him to speak.
Yeah, we just want to make sure we don't miss Chris because he oversaw some of that work, and he's got some results he wants to talk about.
Chris said he'd be here for a few minutes in the morning, and then he'd be available after about 11:30. So he might have called in.
But we probably want to get a hold of him earlier than later, I think, just because this meeting may be over by 11:30. We're not sure.
I'll text them.
I spelled that wrong. And then we want to talk about outplanting of fish for 14 or the disposition. I think we've gone through that before, but maybe just to refresh everybody's mind. But that was a draft agenda that we had put together. We didn't get any feedback from folks on any other additional agenda items. So Sir, anybody on the phone have any additional things they'd like to speak to at today's meeting? Nothing?
Hey, this is Brett. I just want to hang on here from South Bend AM.
Okay, thank you. So, Lance Kruzik?
Yes.
I know you had emailed me maybe a couple days ago and asked if about the agenda. Did you have anything in addition you wanted to talk about today?
No, I don't.
Okay, good enough. Well, with that, why don't we just walk through the December meeting notes. I'm going to pull them up on the screen here.
So how was the drive home from the review? I'm talking to you.
Well, it was good for us because we heeded the advice we got over the phone and took the back roads instead of I-5 and made it back in about 2 hours.
No way.
The guys that left the same time we did were an hour and a half behind us. They took I-5. We stopped and had lunch and everything.
I had lunch with Matt Kiefer and then I visited my grandma briefly in the South Waterfront. I left there at 3:30. I didn't get home till 7:30.
Wow.
And that involved like walking almost 2 miles.
Where did you live?
Two streetcars, Camas, Washington. Two streetcars, three buses, and two maxes.
Wow. Yeah.
Downtown Portland was an adventure. Out. Okay, let's get back on track.
Oh, you're ready? Sorry.
That's all right. So I have on the screen the summary of the December meeting notes, and I did distribute those, or Chris did, I can't remember, one of us did, to you guys. Are there any questions, clarifications, edits, additions you want to add to this? I think these notes were a combination of information I'd written down, I think Bob had written down, and maybe Chris, and we sort of cobbled it all together to the best we could. So,
missing information at the end that says no notes on the last.
Is that on this? On these
couple agenda topics.
No, so notes not available. McKinsey. Yeah, you're right. So if anyone, it's always challenging trying to run a meeting and take notes. That's my excuse. This is why Tammy Mackey's here today.
We're also recording.
She's going to keep us on task. So you're right. We've got, at the end of these meeting notes, we have McKinsey, notes not available, Middle Fork Willamette, notes not available. If anybody has a recollection of events that took place, feel free to email them in. I just, between the three of us, we just obviously came up with a blank, so.
I usually don't go further south than Sandy Am, so.
But we can certainly speak to the notes we do have. And again, if you guys get a chance to look through them and you see something that doesn't look right or you want to add to them, please feel free. It helps us update our record and keep things a little bit more organized.
Hey, Dave, this is Lance. I'm just skimming through them, and there's a lot of little tidbits that everyone should refresh their memory on.
Sure.
As we plan for, like, outlining and for this next season and such. So we don't lose sight of the discussion points that we had previously.
Okay.
I gave us some notes for the North AEM that we should probably be aware of as we plan for this next season.
Do you have something specific, Lance, that I can...
Well, I'm just reading through it, and, you know, a suggestion from Cam, an old suggestion for Brighton Bush should be held at Minto until September, October, then take for the new outplant site. You know, there's things that we've talked about that we shouldn't forget as we plan for 14.
That's right. Okay. Well, that makes sense. And that specific item you just spoke to would play to our fish disposition discussion as well.
Right.
Cast levels this week.
Yeah, we did discuss the idea of holding those fish that were going to be out planted in Brighton Bush.
Right. It's in the first section of the hand there.
Oh, okay. In your arm and eat. Hand out. Okay, great.
And then, Dave, too, with the intent of this, with the notes and stuff like that, Tammy's here, it's going to move more towards the Columbia River model, where the notes get approved, they get posted. Is that I mean, because
sure.
notes get sent around and stuff like that, make sure you review the notes. It is reflected because at one point they're going to get finalized. We haven't been doing a good job on wrapping things up and moving on to the next session.
Yeah.
But we're working on organizationally, trying to get better at that.
Yeah, and when you say posted, I'm not sure what that means, but certainly they'll be resent back to you guys. I don't know where we even post things, but maybe Tammy can give us some guidance on that.
On your Willamette website, which I will send you the link to.
Is it going to be public access?
It is public access, yes.
Just keep
as
it on the download.
As long as these are public meetings, then they'll be public.
If you need the link, ask us. Don't ask our public affairs office. Right?
This is an existing website?
Sort of. It's currently a broken link, so nobody can access what's there.
It's one of the many things that we're trying to get with the reports. Getting access. It was talked about in the last R&E meeting. We need a better file transmission system. It's one of the things that we're working on, kind of, I like to say, it's overall stuff that's typically already in place in the Columbia and is well used by, I think, most of the people in the region. It's just we've been struggling to get these things up, and we're still working on it, is the point.
Yeah, and along those lines, particularly with these fish facility PDTs, where we send out DDRs or EDRs or plans and specs documents, we've really struggled with that because of the size of these documents, and Bernadette can speak to that. But, for example, last December, I thought I had posted, I think it was a 60% DDR for Fall Creek. I sent it out to everybody. Well, apparently it didn't actually get sent out because it was too large. I was told to use, what's it called?
AmberDeck
site. That site went down. It crashed several times while I was trying to upload these documents. So we've been getting direct from Mike now, our supervisor, that we're going to start burning these documents on a disk and actually physically putting them in the mail. Kind of weird, but.
Going back in time.
Time is what I'm saying, but at least it'll work.
Well, in the past, we had a web page where we posted not only all the reports, but EDRs, DDRs, all the different products that we produce. And we're trying to get back to that, but in the interim, they've gone back to go through this because it is painful. But go back through sending out disks, making sure people get the information that's being produced is what it's all about.
Yeah, that's right.
Brad, do we know who did the research review presentations yesterday? I don't know if you were able to open them, but I got them okay.
I got them.
Sounds like you had to send them from his personal email.
And he had to send them to me personally.
Yeah.
They were even too big for your system.
And he went through and compressed all of them, so this is one of the, there's high levels of frustration in our office having to work back through history, but trying to get better. Yeah.
So do we know who to send the reports to?
Well, and then along the lines with those disks, because...
Because I don't know if I know that the answer to that question for the Fish Passage team. So it sounds like that's something we should revisit in each team, who the official reps are. Because if we're doing that, we don't want to send out
disks all
just
all
the entire
the
distribution list.
Exactly, just we do not. Key persons, we'll have to identify those.
Because Fred is the official FPT rep for you guys.
Yep.
So yeah, then in that circumstance, we'd send it to Fred. Mm-hmm. It would be his responsibility to distribute on to other folks in ODF&W1 to review.
But that presumes that this website is not going to work as a repository.
Well, I don't know.
Website?
The Columbia
won't
website.
Work.
Yeah.
But this isn't going to hold. This isn't for the massive documents. This isn't going to hold the.
Put them there.
All of them.
It'll take me a while to post them, but see, this is what
I. It'd be great if we had one go-to spot.
Yeah. No, we and that's.
That's our goal.
On here, but
so
we can't. I can if you get them.
Which
files?
Okay, yeah, we'll work.
We were able to do it. We have space limitations on it.
Okay, no, that's outstanding. And this is one of the things we're working on.
Kind of getting back to where we're at with the meeting. So I've still got the draft notes from December up, and if folks have anything specific they want to talk about with these notes, we can do that today. If not, you guys do have them, so please review them, and feel free to send edits to me. And if there are things that, missing information, if you remember what we talked about, and again, I That was three. It was a combination of three of us putting our notes together, but there's, it does appear we're missing a couple things. I'm not sure what the discussion was about. But yeah, if there's nothing else to speak to with these meeting notes, I'd like to go ahead and move on.
Comments need to be by a certain date so we can finalize by the next meeting.
Yeah, and along those lines, we've had discussions a couple times about having, you know, it's necessary to have a hatchery management team meeting every month, and I think there's a lot of stuff going on. I know that we certainly don't need to have all day meetings. In fact, this one hopefully will be over before noon. There shouldn't be any problems with that. But I think it's important we do get together and continue our monthly discussions. And what I've tried to do is go to an every other meeting conference call type of situation where we're not having to physically drive all over to meet and talk. So
should we jump into the next agenda item here?
Yeah. I just wanted to let you know that let's review these meeting notes and try to get them back to me, let's say, by the end of February. Yeah, the next item is Arminy coordination, fish trap Arminy coordination, and this is something we think is pretty important to do now this time of the year, so that when fish start showing up, we make sure we coordinate our Arminy activities and have access to them, and that the hatchery managers who are on the phone are aware of the needs of the researchers. So it's good close coordination. And with that, Griff, I'll turn it over to you.
So one thing I'd like to do is every year make sure that we get together and go over the Arminy that's planned for that year at the different traps and make sort of a master sort of spreadsheet of it, so that it'll be a lot easier for the facility managers and then for CAM's crew to know kind of what's coming up and what's expected, because it's pretty easy when it's just you guys, I'm guessing, I don't know, maybe it isn't, coordinating internally, but I think it'd be good to document and help us plan things out so that, you know, things aren't a surprise. And I don't know if we want to house this as part of the WFOP process, the Willamette Fish Operations Plan, which eventually will house the fish disposition and dam operations for fish. So I don't know if we want to house it in that. I think we should definitely keep it separate until that's stood up and operating. But, you know, I think it would be nice, too, to have it as sort of a record, so that if a study goes on hold for a number of years and then we start it back up, you can go back and find that data sheet that was used, and you don't have to reinvent the wheel. I also we talked about it before but haven't really discussed it in detail, is sort of begin tracking and cataloging and housing all the samples in sort of a single place, so that people know where to go to find samples in the long term. I see this as part of that effort too, and that's sort of tied into what we've discussed with the Life History Project, and just trying to get ourselves better organized, and so that, you know, when Greg's collecting data at Fall Creek on adults, you know, he's doing it in the same way as Greg Grembemmer is at Minto, and then, you know, that facilitates sort of greater meta-analyses basin-wide, which I think can be a real benefit in the long run, because it might not even be a core-funded project, you know. Maybe the state, NIMFS, or some other entity wants to do sort of a bigger basin-wide study, and then we have all these samples and all this data and information that's sort of easy to collate into a single database for someone to use. And I know it's the devil's in the details, and it's a great vision, but making things like this happen require a lot of effort. But I think once we stand it up and we can just update it every year, I'm hoping it'll be useful for folks. Anything you want to add, Cam or Tom? Or?
Well, I think we've made quite a bit of progress getting directly what you're speaking to, assembling the data, assembling the actual physical specimens for scales and otoliths so far. And Mark has made a lot of progress keeping track of all of the DNA samples that have been collected over time. Our intent is to do exactly what you're speaking of, have a central repository, a physical space where that material exists, and a comprehensive database for ongoing research. It's not strictly core, but most of it is core research in the Willamette.
And I think, yeah, today what we need to do is bring in kind of outside ODFW and make sure that they align with what you guys are doing. So
in the past, what we've been doing, for example, with Chris Cadell, or with mostly with Chris, is just make sure that we're collecting the data that they need. So we accommodate him by essentially adding fields to the data set that we would otherwise be our core information that we collect on fish when we're sampling adults during spawning ground surveys. We'll just add fields that he's interested in, and that's so far worked pretty well. It's evolved over the last couple of years. I believe we had no issues to speak of last year on any of the data we collected in the Middle Fork of the Willamette or in the South Seneca. So that seemed to work.
And then one other thing is, if your crew is not at a trap, making sure it's real crystal clear for the managers ahead of time what things need to be monitored for, especially for pit tags as this paired release study sort of comes to fruition here with returning adults, and making sure that those guys have the equipment and the personnel support that they need, so that we're not death by a thousand cuts here, like, oh, hey, it's not that big a deal to just, add a pit tag and then, do this and do that. And, I could see where we keep adding things to the trap staff that I want some way of sort of keeping track of that so that, we're not going to overwhelm those guys and have something slip through the cracks.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Have you got a way to, one of the things I run into is that you're looking at a certain amount of information to be collected in a certain format, and I assume you've done this in Access or something that everybody can use. Are our field people, the ODFW hatchery folks, do they know where that information is supposed to go, and are you providing them the training on collecting that? Because I'll see stuff, so who wrote this stuff down anyway? It doesn't make any sense. And and sometimes it's from our research staff, but typically they need to know exactly everything that, so they can see it the way you're looking at it, because sometimes they don't think something's important, and really it's a really important piece of information.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually that business of having them have the tools to collect, that's real important, and it needs to be ahead of time, not a month after we get started.
Yeah,
happening.
Absolutely. And we need to do our due diligence too and make sure that the things we're asking for have a purpose, so we're not just burdening them for no reason, to do a whole bunch of extra work that we're not going to use, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Hear about it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we do that all the time.
So maybe we should check in with the folks on the phone and see if anyone has anything to add, especially the hatchery managers.
Yeah, you guys on the phone, have you been tracking what Griff and others have been talking about here?
Yeah, as far as what I see is that all makes sense. And, the other thing that we need to communicate with everybody is, have we done this in the past? Are we reinventing the wheel? We did it 15 years ago, but nobody remembers, or we're not looking deep enough for the data that we've already done.
Yeah, that's a really good point, Dan, because picture us sitting here 5, 6, 7 years from now talking about the same thing, going, oh yeah, that was done back in 2012. So yeah, that's a good point. I don't know if we can go back in history and try to add to this database from more historical information. That would really be, I imagine there's a lot of value out there.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of good information. But clearly, in terms of what we're, what Griff is talking about now moving forward, you know, whatever type of work's going to be done is going to put an additional burden on your staff, Dan, and others. And how will we document this type of information? Are you envisioning some kind of a, like a either Excel or Access database where folks, hatchery folks, can literally access something so we could all share this thing?
I mean, that hasn't been, we floated out a concept paper sort of last year talking about that. It's something that our agency is sort of sensitive to, you know. The shade of money is important when it comes to long-term monitoring versus Harmony. Anyways, so I think it's just going to require something we're going to have to work out in close partnership with ODFW. That hasn't been exactly worked out yet. So
yeah, somebody got to take the lead on that.
Well, we need to discuss it with Mike some more and make sure that we do it properly on our end so that we don't run afoul of the color of money issues. But you know, I don't know, because some of it is for hatchery harmony, and then some of it's for the non-hatchery harmony.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of overlap with both of those. You know, especially at the facilities where we have both natural origin and hatchery fish returning. Right.
Yeah, that's absolutely a gray area that we struggle with internally. Is anybody from the FW knows who we work with. You know, we're always trying to figure out who's paying for what. If we want to get the work done regardless, we've just got to figure out how to fund it.
So I don't know if anyone else wants to interject any more background or any other thoughts before we jump into sort of filling out a table for this year. Okay, great.
And one quick thing, Griff. As we go through and fill out this table, one of the basic questions we have is, does each facility have the fundamental equipment it needs to accomplish the harmony that's coming in?
Yep.
So the pit tag scanners, vials, scissors, all just the basic fundamental things to accomplish the tasks that are being asked is the front
end.
Let
me dive right in then. Okay, yeah. So the way we've done it since I started here, my tenure, is that we have early in the season when there are not large numbers of fish moving, we have one of my staff is on hand at the hatchery whenever they're handling any fish in the trapping operation. That person is responsible for collecting all of the data that we've collectively decided is important. We handle the preparation of all the sampling equipment, all the vials and all that, and we have a system in place that is, I think, as close to foolproof now as it could be. Not so much so in the past, but we don't have confusing samples anymore. Later in the season, when fish really start moving in earnest, we add a second person to the crew, and that's essential because when they're handling large numbers of fish, one person just simply can't do it. In the rare instances when very small numbers of fish are being captured and the hatchery staff are asked to do the sampling, so for example at Boston there might be a day where there's four or five fish in the trap, they need to empty the trap for whatever reason, I won't necessarily send a crew member out there, but they always have the material and the information to sample those fish. They know what to take, what to check for, and that's worked fine for the last couple of years.
Okay, then we're at the point now, my understanding that, for example, all outplanted fish are sampled for DNA, right?
Correct.
And all coated wire tag fish get their snouts cut off.
Correct.
And this year, for the first time, it's important that all fish that come back get scanned for pit tag, because we're going to see substantial numbers of those. So I started to hand out pit tag detectors. Like, Dan, I think you have one, right?
No, I haven't seen one yet.
Oh, you haven't?
Yeah, McKenzie doesn't have one either.
Okay, well, see, there's a good example of some infrastructure.
With the last year's operation at Dexter and Willamette Falls, my guys were on hand every day. They handled fish, so they checked for pit tags when they were handling fish. McKenzie, that's Mike Hoganson's crew, and we gave them a pit tag detector. But they used that pit tag detector for their surveys, too.
Surveys, yeah.
It's probably a very good idea to purchase a half dozen more so that there's one station at the hatchery that stays there. But my crews need them in the field, too, because we're recovering fish.
Good, but we put the detector
in the flume.
Yeah.
I wouldn't hold your breath on it just yet.
Okay.
We've been prioritizing the fish weir at Foster, and that's been a struggle. Good.
So I guess it could go perhaps without saying, but I think it's important to recognize that this is a huge ramp up in the volume of samples and the amount of information that we're collecting compared to 3 years ago. Yeah. So I think it's really timely.
Between genetics and pet tags especially.
With this huge ramp up that we have this relational database and a physical space to keep these samples.
So we can dive into the handout right there. It's on the screen. For those of you on the phone, I've organized it downstream to upstream by sub-basin. And these are just kind of straw men, nuts and bolts exercises at the facilities. And we can add to them whatever you want and discuss. Starting at the North Santa Am and the Minto Fish Collection Facility, as Mark pointed out, for the last few years, we're adopting 100% DNA sampling of fish outplanted above the facilities, and so there's no question as to subsampling. It's 100% of any fish that goes above the dam. We're also at that facility sampling 100% of the fish that are passed above Minto, both steelhead and Chinook. So again, there's no subsampling issue there. We're not trying to decide on a sample size. What is a little bit...
So your crew is doing the genetic sampling, right?
Well, with Greg and his crew, so they're working together, but they're on site.
But ODFW, CAM.
But I thought some fish were being routed directly through the flume and weren't being touched.
No.
Okay.
At Minto?
Minto.
Did you say you're doing steelhead as well?
No, there's no volitional passage right now at Minto because of the RM&E needs.
Okay. So they're all hands-on?
Mm-hmm. Might be today with 10,000 DFS.
Catch them.
So one question that I brought up with some of the other researchers is what level of scale sampling needs to happen. And we haven't resolved that. I'm not going to resolve it now. I just proposed that we take 100 scales from each species that we outplant just to get a representative sample to look at age structure.
Fill that
That's
out
what
here.
My contractual obligation is, to be able to genetic report sample on what the age structure is of the naturally produced fish in the basins. There might be other needs to have a larger number of known ages from the fish that hasn't been articulated to me yet. So I think Kathleen and yourself, Mark, are thinking about it. If it's necessary, we can do it. It's very time consuming and hard on the fish. That's all. We're proposing for the first time to do marking of all outplanted and past fish in the North Santa Am. I want to use pit tags. I sent your email recently, you need the pit tags. I like that idea of the pit tags because of the infrastructure is going in place watershed-wide to detect pit tags. And we have an unsettlingly large tag loss rate with Floyd tags, demonstrated by the cougar trapping and double tagging. So I prefer to avoid tag loss. Our carcass recovery rates during spawning surveys are not as high everywhere as we'd like them to be. So it seems like just using a technique that has a higher tag retention rate makes sense if we can afford it.
Hey, Cameron. You're proposing to pit tag 100% of the fish that are passed above Minto.
Correct.
And what's the purpose of that for? Because you have trouble recovering a lot of those carcasses up there, don't you?
Right. So our carcass recovery rate approaches 20% in the North Santa Am. So for 1,000 fish, we get a couple hundred back. We want to be able to assign those fish to time and location of release to be able to, like we do at Foster, estimate or measure survival of spawning. We can do that if we can identify individual fish.
That can be important later when we do the parentage analysis, right? So you're going to have a genetic sample for an individual, and you'll know when that individual is trucked above the dam and where it was released above the dam. And then, at a minimum, you'll have if we continue the sampling, the returning adults.
Yeah. No, that makes sense to me above the dam. It's above Minto that I was struggling with a little bit.
I'm most interested above Minto to get tags in the steelhead we put up there. because I want to find out what happens to them. But if we recover those fish down below Minto,
then
we know that that fish was passed above Minto, so fell back, and we could make an assumption then that it spawned down below. Not necessarily make the assumption, but we can at least hypothesize that that fish fell back to spawn.
We don't have anything on your list right now for steelhead sampling. We need to add an item number.
Yeah, add that. I think I have it in for South San Diego.
So we can cut and paste from South San Diego?
Right.
Okay.
And not to get in the weeds, but then tagging style, would we go dorsal sinus for
dorsal sinus?
Perineal
cavities?
Okay,
right.
Yeah, cool.
Because they'll shed if they spawn.
Yep, exactly. Thanks.
Okay. So Dave is adding steelhead to the North San Diego. I should have put it in there. The next item on the list on the North San Diego is what to do about
that hole.
Protracted holding of fish that we outplant above Detroit. The 2013 data very convincingly demonstrated that just putting fish at the base of Brightbush doesn't guarantee any fish spawn there. So I would like to see that subbasin or tributary seeded, and I think because of the infrastructure at Minto, we can do that. We built a holding pond. I just threw out 300 fish, 150 pairs, and outplant them in September. Then they're more likely to spawn in large numbers in the Brightonbush.
And Cam, what percent of the Brightonbush fish does that represent? That 300. How many would you typically put up there?
We typically put about 40% up there, and 70% on the north side. what's the run size going to be?
What's our disposition table?
40, 60 on the disposition table. If that's about what we put up there this year.
Yeah.
2,000.
600 to the north, 600 to the right.
600? Okay. That's what I was looking for.
Greg Bemmer, how many adult fish can be very comfortably held in the long-term holding pond?
I'll have three for brood, one for steelhead. So I'll basically have two that we can hold long term in with 300 in each.
So I'm only suggesting a sample size of about total 300.
Yeah, one pond.
For one pond.
I'll hold all those, so we're good.
Okay.
Close 300. Get into the weeds here. Do you anticipate just picking through the runners as they come in, or any particular group you'd want to hold?
That's a good point. How are we gonna?
It's different for what we're proposing the South San Diego. I thought that they'd be sequestered throughout the run, but this isn't exactly an experiment. We've got pretty convincing evidence right now that if we hold the fish on good clean water, we can keep them alive. Mm-hmm. And if we put them up there ready to drop their cargo, they'll spawn where we put them. That's what we're after in this case. This isn't a pre-spawning mortality experiment. It's a force these fish to adopt a natal stream that's not their own.
Oh, yeah, right.
And the new outplanting sites we think will be ready by then? Is that the latest plan?
So more and more, this seems to me like, you know, something that would be in like the WFOP, where, mm-hmm. you know, we would have a protocol for how to collect the fish. You know, we want the fish sampled over the run, representative over the run, and it would go in the fish operations plan, that the facility operator would have something to refer to.
Okay, that'll work for 2015, but
yeah,
about WFOP for 2014 is in place right now, and it's actually got enough flexibility that we can say that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the other thing, the other product from this too, is if we could build on sort of the standard operating procedures that you guys have already worked out, is we could have something, you know, we had that guide for researchers for conducting research at our projects, add to that document. So if you're going to be sampling at the traps, this is how you're going to sample. And this is the minimum data you're going to take. You know, so that if we can contract with someone other than ODFW for a research project, that you know, they're going to follow the standard operating procedures that have been developed, that the hatchery managers are familiar with, and that anything that goes beyond that, we can identify and make sure that we address, right?
But it'll capture the minimum.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Last item for the North.
One thing we'll need to talk about when we start getting these numbers for out plans for the North this year, they have a real high number of code wire tag percents come back just from a lot of the studies that were done years ago. So it'll have to come down to a decision, do we need the code wire tag data or do we outplant that fish?
So that's the last agenda or mm-hmm. item in this section right here. And right. I propose we've invested an enormous amount of time and money into the code wire tag program. The fish that I've been responsible for organizing the tagging of release for starting in 2011, they're going to start coming back in 2014-15. I want information from all those tags. A coded wire tag fish should go to brood or be killed and used for some other purpose. We won't be outplanting coded wire tag fish.
Okay, so anything else for ODFW for Minto before we start looking at like U of I or anyone else?
So maybe it's presumed, but I might add 100% pit tag scanning to all of these basins.
Okay, let's add that. So it's 100%. Not presumed.
And I thought I heard you guys discussing on the side that is not going to be happening in an automatic fashion.
Not at Minto.
The latter at Minto yet.
So,
and even when it does, it'll still... All it'll do is tell you that in the tank you got a pit tagged fish.
Warning us. That's useful to know.
Yeah.
Hey, we've got to look hard for tags.
Yeah.
But okay. Greg, every time I was out there at Minto, we checked all the fish with that wand, the pit tag wand. Do you know whether that was the case throughout the season? I know that my folks did it while they were there, but were there any missed fish that were not scanned for pit tags? Did you recall?
I can't think. I mean, sometimes we were wondering if it was working or not because we wouldn't see any, but...
That's the trouble when, I think, Tom, you
will
have
this
to
speak
year. To that.
Yeah.
Three come back to the watershed.
Well, let's see, H3s in the North St. Am are coming back this year, right? So there won't be that many, but H4s in the Middle Fork will be coming back, so there should be a number of those. And we should have a heads up from the falls adult detector. We should have a general idea of how many are in the system.
Don't forget.
We need
Kirk's.
Both Mark Shannon and Mark, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Kirk's been pit tagging 20,000 fish a year.
You're right. It goes for nationally produced fish, too. So.
Leon, add 100% coded wire tag scanning to item 5 too.
100% pit tag
and coded wire tag, right?
Oh. Well, I guess that's SMP.
It's
well,
applied.
We do that. But okay.
Put on that.
So what about U of I? What are they supposed to do when a radio tagged Chinook shows up or a radio tagged steelhead? Anything different than
currently what they're doing is they're scanning it for pit tag, recording the pit tag number,
okay,
and then treating that fish however it would normally be treated.
Okay. So let's go ahead and get that down.
Set. Say that again, please.
So it'll already be scanned for pit tag because we're scanning everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
So then we need to any pit tag fish, we need to note whether or not it's radio tag, because then that'll let us know if there's been a tag loss. So
currently what happens is the tag is usually pulled and then we have a data sheet on hand at each facility that U of I provided for tag, radio tag recoveries, where we record all the information about that. And the tag goes to us, my samplers, who package it in a padded envelope and mail it back to U of I.
So you're pulling the radio tag before outlanding? Or?
Yeah. And then you got magnets, you're shutting the tags off.
Right.
We should get that detail in here.
Now, I think that's different at Foster because we recycled steelhead with radio tags there as part of the recycle test. But
we pulled tags at Foster also.
From Chinook, yeah.
So we should reconsider that if we want to look at fallback over the fish weir.
Mm. So that was my reason for having the pit tag, 100% pit tagging. The next section is going to be South San Diego. But yeah, okay. We can talk about that.
Yeah, we got a request in, and we're for those fish permitting wise.
So when you beep a fish with the pit tag scanner, do you record any information on it? Do you handwrite the tag number away,
or do you just download it? Handwrite it all, but starting in 2014, this year, it all goes to a PDA, so it's electronic data entry for hatchery sampling.
And so you can right then enter in the P3 file whether or not it's radio tagged?
Yes, as a comment. And
awesome.
If we pull the tag, we record the tag channel code, sex of the fish, length, if there's a scale sample.
And so you guys are going to help Craig's crew get up to speed on how to do all that in case, you know, there's a fish fire at South San Diego and you guys aren't there and they need to work up fish without you?
It's unlikely to be a problem on the North San Diego because Bart DeBow is on hand leading all the time. That's his only responsibility apart from the Bennett trapping during spring shrimp season.
Anything else?
Any question on that?
Go ahead.
So there's no further radio tag work going on above Minto or Detroit where it would be value added just to pass those fish and continue monitoring them?
Good question. Not right now. Can you do radio telemetry above Minto?
Yes. Yeah, pretty easily from the road.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we track fish.
Well, maybe just something to think about. If those fish are already tagged, whether we can get additional information out of those fish above Minto.
So maybe you pull the radio tag on the
hatchery fish.
Leave the tag in the wild fish. Put them above Minto, and then we can get an idea of how they distribute in that habitat up there. So that's a good point, Lance. That'd be great to see if they're spreading out in there, like they're spawning, or if they're banging their heads against Big Cliff.
Right? So that means adding mobile telemetry to Chris's crew.
Well, yeah, it means adding. We've been subtracting, as you know. Right now, I owe you an answer on the budget. Right now, it's just because budgets are tight, right?
Yeah.
So I've had to squeeze every project. And Chris is one that got squeezed, and I still owe you an answer on we had to squeeze the other mobile components. So I'll look into this, but it's not a given that we can.
But if we don't follow this procedure, it's not possible.
Yep.
So we might as well.
Yep, put it on there.
Are they mobile tracking below Minto already? I mean,
no, they're really, really relying heavily, because it's so time consuming, relying heavily on all of the fixed stations they have in place. And that's just for Chinook. Now, we're theoretically going to have pretty extensive mobile telemetry for steelhead, but that ends in June.
So,
I'm not capturing.
So,
I would just simply make a note to yourself that somebody has to talk to Chris Codill and see whether he can absorb that.
Maybe yes. I should type.
Yeah, you are, right?
That's fine. And that's an action item for me. I'll work with Chris.
Right.
Because that's important right now. I'm with you. Just money-wise, some things are going to have to give.
If he starts whining, it's about a 4-mile stretch of stream.
Yeah, it's a tight stretch.
It's 4 miles long.
Yeah.
It's not like what we're doing at Steelhead. It's a linear check on, is there a fish that can stay up here?
I got a wine. Because everybody's squeezing my buttons.
So what about Steelhead? What are we doing with Tag Steelhead? Archie Tag Steelhead?
We're leaving them tagged.
The same, we're leaving them tagged. So we're treating them the same as we would normally if it is a summer run, the fish is killed, tag is removed. If it's a unclipped fish, it's returned to the river with the tag in place. But we've scanned it for a pit tag, so we know what fish it was.
Yep. And so then we'll also get shedding of the radio tags.
So I know it's, it seems kind of like minutia here, but I think this will be helpful for Greg.
Oh, no, it's important. So. And all the people who are working there, right?
Anything else? Anything else for Minto? Anybody on the phone? Any other studies?
Hey, so, the genetic sampling is occurring. What about the analysis? What's the latest for North City Amps?
We don't really have an update.
Are you talking Chinook or Steelhead or both?
Done or no?
Chinook.
We're kind of in a holding pattern with the budget. So, we don't...
Worth not being, the analysis isn't occurring, or it is, or
that's
the deal, I don't know the way.
So the status hasn't changed since last time. We're not planning on doing it this year, but we're going to look and see if we can fund it with end-of-year funds.
Okay.
So no change.
But for the purpose...
We've been out with us since 2000, so almost 14 years. Have we done any analysis on whether or not it's even working?
What was your question, Greg? Can you say it again?
The DNA samples have been accumulated for decades.
13 years straight, and I just didn't know if there's any analysis on if it's even working.
Short answer is no, Greg. The samples are in hand. We can do it.
I just didn't know if we're spending a lot of money trying to figure out some data we already have.
Any other detail we want to add to any of these items before we move to the South Stadium? So we're sort of setting the die here.
Okay.
We good? Okay, South Stadium.
Biggest difference, of course, on the South Stadium is only putative natural origin recruits are passed above the dam. So they have to have an adipose fin, whether they're a steelhead or a chinook. We are continuing 100% DNA sampling for both groups of fish with the we envision this going forward, the pedigree approach that started last year. Melissa Evans reported on it, Science Review, will go forward into the foreseeable future, at least the next couple of years, so we can reconstruct complete broods.
Groups of fish being the species, right?
Right.
Sure.
Want to switch to pit tags there? The Floyd tags, we're losing. Based on the results from the cougar Floyd tag, double Floyd tagging, we're probably losing a very large proportion of the, like 20% or more of the Floyd tags in the South Sandy M2. Pit tags should be retained at a higher rate. We'll get better data. And if fish are falling back, we'll be able to detect them, mm-hmm. whatever the species.
So they're single tag or double tag?
They're single tag at Foster. Could conceivably double tag them because it's likely we'll retain most of them.
So then
we can't detect them as they fall back over the weir. So the pit tag sort of does double duty.
So 100% pit tag scanning of returning adults.
Yep.
Both steelhead and chinook.
Right.
What about summers? Are we pit tagging summers where we need to be scanning them?
Chris putting pit tags in his radio tag?
Yes.
Yep. And Fred's also pit tagging both the Omicus and Chinook on their way out.
So those are...
But But going back to Scanned Summers, is there other stuff on there where they're pit tagging as part of the hatch release strategies or anything?
No, I don't think so.
But it will be part of the triple.
I'm not sure if U of I, I know the radio tags, summer steelhead that they tagged in the fall, those might have pit tags.
Yeah, they did. So 100% pit tag scanning of all fish coming through.
Are we RT tagging there at all this year?
At Foster?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we hope to.
Okay. Again, subsample for scales. We've been collecting a lot much larger proportion of collecting scales from a larger proportion of those fish in the past. Somebody has to give me a convincing argument that they need more than 100 scale samples, and we're talking about it now. And my crews handle that, so that's not something the hatchery staff has to deal with. Steelhead, same story. 100% DNA sampling for unclipped steelhead passed above Foster. Subsample 100 for scales. Check 100% of them for pit tags and apply pit tags to 100% of the fish we put above.
And then for any morts, you're taking odorless band scales from any potential morts? Okay.
Wild fish.
Yep.
That was for winter steelhead, you said?
For winter, winter steelhead. Yes. I don't know what we do with natural origin summer run. What do you do?
Yeah,
I'm
Brad
right there.
Phone.
Brad?
Who, Matt?
Yeah.
You get 3 or 4 unclipped summer steelhead a year. What do we do with those?
We just kit them and typically get them to the food bank or take them to landfill.
Okay.
Are we going to get a genetic bunch?
We don't now. What would that tell us? That they're summer run, which we know. Mark?
It wouldn't tell us anything unless we were doing full PBTs for some reason. From a base tagging.
But that would
be, it just tells us.
Would
it
be a hybrid with a winner at all?
Could be.
It could be. But, I mean, those are questions we'd actually like to get to, right? More sampling of steelhead above and below the projects, but so those
should we just
those are a small number of fish that.
But we're doing 100% DNA sampling of natural origin steelhead. Should we just say steelhead or
makes it simple?
Anything that comes back to
a small number.
Foster with a fin, we're getting a punch on, right?
Sure.
Let's see, why not?
Sure. Okay. So change that ST period.
To collect it now, then wish we had it later.
And make sure it's like that up here, too.
The next item from the South San EM, U of I has an interest, so do I, on sequestering some fish in the long-term holding pond before outplanting above Foster. These, remember, are probably most of them are going to be natural origin fish, so wild fish. Chris proposed holding 125 fish total on site at the new Foster facility, and then outplanting them, quote, later. And that's a little less than what I thought. I thought we'd just repeat the about 300 fish, or about a third of the total run for holding on station to be outplanted above Foster in mid-September. And that's the straw man here. What are we going to do? The background on that is that we wanted to do that at Willamette Hatchery, but we didn't have the infrastructure to hold fish for a long time, separate from all the broodstock. So what Chris is interested in doing is just taking that design and transporting it to the South Sandy Hen. There's permitting requirements associated with that.
Yeah, because this is way different than what we've ever done with these sorts of experiments in the past, where we've used hatchery origin fish, right?
Right.
So definitely going to need a study plan reviewed by the region.
So I would propose that we defer discussion of that line item until Chris gets on the phone. He should be back on the phone in an hour or so, I hope. If he doesn't, I mean, it's his design. I support it, but...
Well, and just because of time, let's roll it forward. You know, we've got another meeting in a month, maybe. I don't want to kick the can too far down the road.
Okay, well, the bottom line is that the infrastructure is in place. According to conversation with Brett, it looks like they're on schedule, and it's going to be a hole in the ground full of water that is made to hold fish for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was out there yesterday, so they watered up the long-term post-sort holding today.
And it didn't leak.
So, well...
All right. Again, South Sandy Am has been releasing lots of coated wire tag fish. Fish of great deal of interest to me are coming back this year and next year. All coated wire of tagged fish are to go to brood or be killed in salmon.
Is this just... So what coated wire tag studies have been done with Summers? None?
So, well, Summers? None.
Nothing.
None. Nothing on... Huh. To my knowledge, okay. Nobody has ever coated wire tagged steelhead.
Okay. Chinook.
Okay, so this is different a little bit, Brett. It means that we have to coated wire tag one, all of the fish, even on days you're planning on just recycling.
Okay.
Comment on that? Does it add a lot of work? I mean, my staff would be on hand to help or do whatever.
No, that's fine. I mean, I don't necessarily want to. I mean, we don't select our brood just because they have a coated wire tag. So, I mean, we could have another disposition for ones that
want
the brood. But we can definitely want the fish. That's no problem.
Right. So the issue there, a little bit of a backstory, is that it's arithmetically a lot easier to expand coated wire tag recoveries if you can say you sampled 100% of the fish and checked them all for coated wire tags. If it's less than 100%, then you have to expand coated wire tag recoveries, which algebra, not very good at it. So
yeah, I think just in the past, you know, our old situation was we just didn't have the space to hold fish. Well, now we do, so it shouldn't be a problem.
All right. The timing's perfect. Because the fish I'm interested in are coming back this year and next.
Okay, so I've transferred some of the stuff from North Sanium here with the pit tag scanning with the P3 comment for NERT tag fish. Is there any other comments we're missing out on the pit tag scanning that you want people to track? Had a third eye.
I like them to record the sex. They do that because that tells us often tells us the error rate in sex assignment at Willamette Falls. So, but we do that automatically.
All
right. Sex and size.
Is there anything else we're doing with winners there for Harmony that we need to be tracking? We're pit tagging them. We're not RT tagging them, that picture, right?
Well,
for winners, just the summer.
I don't know.
Yeah,
we're on hand and helping if the U of I test for recycling of Summer Run is going forward. Mm-hmm. If that happens, we're there to help.
I'm going to put some question marks there.
Hey, we're working through a couple of issues.
Okay. Sounds good. Oh, so what about both of these facilities? And that's an agenda item for a Fish Passage team later this month. But should we put something in here now for Winter Steelhead Brood for surrogates? Hmm. Are we going to wait until we have that?
Well, the idea was we would discuss that there. We could, you're welcome to put it in now.
Yeah.
Let's just put a placeholder, right?
Yep.
Right.
All
right.
Yeah, Kim wasn't available until the 27th, so that discussion got moved that day. Okay. She's the one who was writing the permit.
And one logistically, it's hard to sample across the run there.
Impossible, because there's nowhere to hold a very small number of fish. So basically, I think you can hold a few. Depends on how they're set up. I don't really know whether they can hold them for a week somewhere in a crowded off pond or something like that. But ideally, what we do is what we did at Minto. Well, very successfully, is sometime during the peak of the run, go in for a couple or a few days and just take your two or three fish, whatever are there and ripe and ready.
And that's why I thought the 27th would be fine for discussion.
If it happened.
The RMNE meeting on the 27th or the Fish Passage?
I think we're doing it at the Fish Passage team.
Kim can be there on the 27th.
Oh.
The surrogate discussion is going to occur on the 27th. That. Sorry.
So let's take it off the agenda.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's one. One of the reasons we didn't send, right?
Right. Perfect. Okay. So the 27th, right, Bernadette? Is the
yes.
Army.
Mm-hmm.
Great. All right. Thanks, guys. Anything else for South CNEM? And we're not, at this point, planning on taking any brood at South CNEM, right? It's all at Minto?
For the winter surrogates?
Yeah.
Well, that's the discussion.
It's part of the discussion.
It's okay. Part of the discussion.
So I want to put the placeholder in both.
Right? Yep. Because, right. There's different perspectives on that.
Okay. Anybody on the phone? Anything else for South CNEM, Brett?
Not that I can think of right now.
We should think about things we want to track for sort of post-construction evaluation. Looking at injury and mortality, we might want to formalize that a little bit more than we had for Minto.
Recording lesions and things like that?
Yeah. Why don't I put something for that here, too, that you, Cam, and I maybe talk about.
Okay.
And I don't think it'll be much than what you're already doing.
Okay. No problem.
Okay.
Let's skip to the Willamette Dexter.
Yeah, this one's going to be a little complicated, huh? Early. Okay, so these early outplants.
Well, let's go to the date, because one of the things we discussed at the past meetings is the week we could get the facility open. For the car work, is that where you were starting with the early out plans?
Right, and assistance provided by the Corps. John, that you were going to touch base with Dan to talk through it.
The week of the 12th or the week of the 19th. We're hoping for the week of the 12th this year.
So 1 week earlier, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be a full month earlier. And we were just looking into feasibility because scheduling the cruise and stuff like that to begin.
Dan?
He's asleep on me.
Yeah, I'm here.
So I didn't hear any whining or complaining. Have you got?
Because I was on mute.
You got to cover up all the screaming. Will you be able to provide us?
I wouldn't laugh. They were all mute.
But you can do that a week ahead of schedule, right? I think we talked about it. Normally you start on the 19th, and so we just want to open the trap on the 12th.
So we're talking May, though, not
yeah,
June. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, good, yep.
Normally we start in the middle of June, so we're already going way early. And honestly, I don't know if we'll be watered up by the week of the 12th. Our last release isn't until mid-April out of there. And then it's going to take us at least a month to get it cleaned up, and Tim's on vacation the first 2 weeks of May.
So you'd have,
I would say probably not going to happen this year.
So you'd have to have it done before the 1st of May before you, so that you'd be able to open on it. There'll be nobody there during that
time. There's nobody there. Yeah, Tim's, you know, as the way that facility runs, Tim doesn't get a lot of vacation until we're empty. Just because it's staffed by one person 24/7, 365 days out of the year. So if he tries to take his vacation time when there's no fish on hand, and he's already, you know, got the first 2 weeks of May off this year, and, you know, by the time we get everything pressure washed, disinfected, and ready to go again, it's quite the process.
So, but, so we're looking at the 19th still, though, right?
Yeah, I would say the 19th of that week is going to be the earliest we can get it open.
Do we need to follow up with this and keep tracking? Is there any other way we could get somebody else besides Tim? I mean, is there other things we could do?
Nope, Tim's the one.
Yeah, there's only
He's
one
the
guy
one
there.
That runs the trap.
We have one house, one person, one place. Nobody's ever found
You got a wife, kids? A dog?
Yeah, well, that's part of it is there's nobody, not even any place to stay down there. You have to live in Tim's house when you're doing duty down there. That's a marginal issue. We could probably make, we can make sure that we can put some extra people from the other sites over in order to help get done by the 1st of May and being able to do that, but there will be nobody there to operate the facility.
I thought the core was operating.
Actually, Tim's the one that knows how to run that trap efficiently. I mean, I can push buttons, but I'll guarantee I'm going to kill fish. And he's the master of it. He's been doing it for 18 years or so.
All right, why don't we
let's look for the 19th.
You know, you may end up, the way the weather's going, the 19th may be the same as the 12th last year.
And so let's leave it for that for now. And if we can keep brainstorming on things we could do. We got a little bit of time here. Appreciate it.
That's a tight spot just because of the way it's staffed. It's one of the few places we got where there's only one person. And it's just, and we don't have any, there's no cruise quarters down there, there's no trailer, there's no nothing.
So we got the night.
Just the way our releases are and stuff, and the way that place operates, you can't just shut off one pond. You know, it'd be one thing if you could shut down ponds and pressure wash them and get them disinfected as like we do up here at the main facility. But that just has a head pipe on it, so as long as there's fish in one pond, all four ponds are running.
Which includes the pre-sort.
You have to wait until it's completely dried up before you can.
No, I know it's challenging, and I appreciate it. I'm just trying to keep, let's throw the 19th on there and keep brainstorming. Who knows? Somebody may have an epiphany, and I don't think it's coming, but you never know.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, the 19th is pretty early as far as history's shown at that place, so.
It'd be pretty unlikely to be any fish there.
Yeah, so no, we appreciate it. Thank you.
So what kind of sampling do we need there? Do we need Chris to fill that out?
Yeah.
Okay, so in terms of other sampling at Dexter, the numbers of fish that are outplanted sort of constrain us, and the speed with which it has to happen constrain us from catching a lot of detailed data like we do at the other facilities. We get the number of fish by sex. We get a DNA sample from 100% of the fish put up there. We get to check them for wire, and then that's it. We don't get specific lengths on scale samples from fish there. But it occurred to me that it's at some point we have to have a discussion on whether we really want to or need to continue outplanting 4,000 fish above Lookout and Hills Creek. If there's a reason to do it, obviously we can do it. We've been doing that now for the couple of years I've been here. But is there a reason that we could scale that back that would still meet the needs for the ongoing research? What do people think?
What would an alternative be if we didn't outplant? Because that is a ton of fish, no doubt.
A ton of fish would be donated, sold, used for nutrient enhancement, something. But I don't know, I'm just opening it up for discussion. Why are we putting that many fish up there? Do we need to? We're getting tens of fish back as a naturally produced fish from thousands that are outplanted.
And that's, you know, kind of want to emphasize what Grimbrenner said, too. You know, we've been doing this on Little Fork since 94, and I ain't seeing anything. You know, there's no more unmarked fish returning to Dexter than there was in 94.
Well, but I mean, if you look at
spinning our wheels and wasting money.
There are changes that are being done. There is Harmony that is ongoing. We've begun temperature control operations at Lookout. Based on what we're seeing at Detroit, we would expect some passage there of fish. They've been doing some trap and haul above hills. So the point being, there's Harmony that's ongoing, that's looking at capacity, looking at individuals that are produced, the timing. There's all the life history metrics we're looking at as we work towards facility design. There's information that we need in order to accomplish that. And it's kind of, it goes to another team that's working on these issues as well, the Harmony team.
So to summarize, Dan's been doing it for a long time, but we haven't really changed anything since the last couple of years. So the last 3 years we've been spilling, so we'll start seeing the returns there. Then the question is, do we change anything for the upcoming years? We're looking at other operational alternatives there to try to implement in 15, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we probably want an apples to apples. The database we have going back further, you know, as we continue to experiment there, you know, kind of argues to continue it, but only if we implement some changes to test, right? Because if we keep doing our standard operating procedures, then yeah, absolutely. Why go through the extra effort?
The definition of insanity, right?
Yeah, right.
So is there something we need to capture here with the...
I'm just interested in knowing whether the scale of outplanting in 2014 needs to be the same as it has been the last couple of years.
And
your argument is right. If you've got in place, planned, high possibility of success, changes in operations, then yeah, we can do that. But we've got a couple of years of data now, for example, above Hills Creek. They'll build lots of reds.
Yep.
They'll crank out lots and lots of fry that enter the reservoir. And then, you know, something else happens to them. They don't come back.
They get eaten by the 10 bull trout.
The 10, 15. There might be 15.
Well, they're very hungry.
But then they catch 200. How does that work?
I don't know. All right. Do you want to capture that? I'm sorry, that was more of an aside, I guess. We're poised to do the same thing we've done the last couple of years, and get 100% DNA samples and know how many fish are up there, and then we do our surveys.
Can I tie that comment back to? So if we do start seeing larger numbers of fish back and because of the different operations, the spill and that sort of thing, when we're out planting 4,000 adults out up there, the pedigree project is, that greatly inflates that budget.
Yeah. Good point. So we should look at what's the minimum sort of numbers of fish we can put up there where we can still measure differences, right?
Exactly.
Okay. So let's think about that. Who would spearhead that and look at, you know, the current return rates and then some sort of hypothesized return rates under the new ops and what sample size we get from that and what power we'd have?
Let's work together on that because you'd certainly be the one to do the modeling for the power analysis.
Yes, because if we can make an apples to apples and it's just a big apple and a little apple, then...
Right, so I guess we need to kind of get a sense of what sorts of returns first do we see with the spill operation, and then the hypothesis would be what sort of improvement could be made with some alternative operation, and that would drive, that estimate of improvement would drive the sample size numbers. Right?
And maybe we could crank some stuff through FPW.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
To help you guys with that. All right.
The modeling tools we're putting in place, this is a good application.
How do we capture that so it's not just a brilliant idea that...
How do we execute on it?
Evaporates before lunch. Looking at you, Bob.
Yeah, I know.
Since Fenton's not here.
I'm thinking for...
Make Fenton do it?
Yeah. Go to Fenton. He's got an action item.
Does he?
No.
Identify. When I get here, so revisit... Deal of outplanting by examining different.
So, John, what does that do to hatchery operations there? If all of a sudden, throwing it out there, 2,000 additional clipped Chinook aren't going to be outplanted, what are we going to do with them?
Well, we'll sell them.
Okay.
Right, Mr. Peck?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, we can sell them. What it means, we don't spend fuel. We don't have people driving trucks. That's a major problem. The Corps of Engineers has offered to add us trucks and people and everything to haul these fish, but they've never done it. Nobody else has to haul that many fish.
I think he's talking to you.
Well, I think that was... I think that was tied to the new facility. The new truck was tied to the new facility.
No, it's for 5 years now. I've listened to... Ops say they were.
I've only been here 4 years.
Before your time.
God, somebody else.
It's always been a problem. Hmm. And it's a good thing not
good
to
problem.
Have to haul 2,000 more fish.
We're
going to have a sales contract at McKenzie and South San Diego and Lam, or, you know, Dexter. So we've got a way to sell those fish. Early enough in the year that they're still food quality. We actually make money.
Oh, well, then you make money, and then you're spending less and making more.
Yeah.
So I don't understand, though. I understand.
Okay. We don't outplant coated wire tag fish there. They go to brood or are killed and sampled. Same as other facilities.
Need 100% pit tag scanning there.
Oh, this is important, right. That's where we're going to get some fish back.
The tail race for this group, I presume?
Hey, you know what?
Very likely. Not the Hills Creek group.
We're pretty sure the Hills Creek group.
Hills Creek.
So can I just cut and paste this number three here?
Yeah.
Will that work?
Yep.
Okay.
So, Cam, are we going to get help with that?
You'll have probably Brian and JD again.
I mean, you realize that's 8,000 to 10,000 fish that got to be scanned.
Mm-hmm. You're good.
So is there any kind of Cajun infrastructure we can set up to, you know, like a little pass-through for them that'll help pass through with a couple
with
tennis rackets?
Dan on that. But
so, Dan, don't you put them through the tunnel detector now?
I think he does.
Yeah, but that's not going to tell us if it's a code wire tag or a pit tag.
Yeah, it tells you whether it's coated wire tag or pit tag, because it'll beep on either.
Exactly.
So then,
or a radio tag will really set it off.
So what would that mean? Could we, I mean, we've got Dave Hewlett, he's great at stuff like that. Could he set it up so that it's got a pit tag detector in line?
Yeah, probably. Because our big antennas, you don't have to pass them through them, you just get them close.
Because what you don't want to do is have to have that little travel iron thing and run it over every fish.
I think it might involve buying another cheese block and antenna set up.
Okay.
I think I have paired release money left we could do that with.
We knew this was going to happen, Dan, when we put pit tag fish in the river and they have to be checked for pit tags as adults. We did know that.
Yes, we did.
We knew the risk.
The world was the end first.
I need to task you with this, Tom.
I'm on it.
Okay, last item there. What do we do about unclipped fish coming back to Dexter? And I want them to go to brood because I have no other place to put them where I'd be comfortable putting a fish.
Did you discuss that with Bruce?
Okay. Yeah, right now they can't, right?
Yeah, right now we are.
We are?
Yeah, we are.
That was the big flail here not too long ago. Oh, fish bio meeting.
Yeah.
Last fall. Because we decided to do it, and yet Fish Division didn't want any wild fish. So, have you spoken with them?
No, I haven't. I'm talking to you guys first. What are we going to do with these fish? We put them above Lookout, they're going to die. We put them below Dexter, they're going to die. Put them above Hills Creek, their babies all die. So,
where'd they come from?
So about, between 30 and, say, 50% of them came from the Middle Fork of the Willamette River somewhere. The rest came from a problem with fin clipping. So most of them are hatchery
working. Mismarked.
Mismarked, yeah. But some of them are not.
See, they're not all going to die.
All right, well, I want to start typing here. Natural origins.
It's already up there. Good. Number four.
Number four.
Okay. Putative.
Well, I think
we're under orders.
Until the HGMPs are approved, we're not supposed to be taking natural
origins. Lance, close your ears.
Great. I'm the one asking the question. What are we going to do?
The HGMPs are going to be approved by this.
I asked that last year, and that could happen.
I think there's a real chance of that this time.
I think there is too.
Yeah. Lance is on the phone.
Yeah, Lance.
Don't count on it.
Lance, we have to talk. So no,
don't count on it.
Hey,
just put it until HGMP.
Okay.
Approved. No,
So where are we putting them then?
Related to the Dexter situation and these unmarked, it's clearly a different situation than like McKenzie and South Bay Am and Minto. So you guys need to check in with Fish Division and see where they want to go, but we're comfortable with incorporating those fish into the brood. You're talking about a handful of fish. It's important to realize the numbers here. And
correct.
It's a completely different
I'll make
situation.
That inquiry, Griff.
Okay.
Fish Division.
It's 15 fish, something like that.
Well, sometimes it's
the smartest thing.
100, right?
Well, no. I don't think that we ever confirmed 100
oh, really?
Naturally produced fish. I think 60 is about the max I've seen in recent years.
Yeah, when I did the genetic work, I think it was about 30. Mm-hmm.
So what, any sampling that needs to happen here?
Yeah, let's talk about that. Today we do length, sex, scale, DNA, otolith, and that's it. I would just propose we do that. I mean, what else are we going to part out? We can look at organ systems or something, I guess. But it's a complete total sample of all those fish.
Well, I think we need to keep watching, too, because I know people in terms of operations don't think we're going to get that much for them. I think we need to be careful because it takes time. We've got to let the brood.
You might get surprised.
Yeah, so let's not just,
natural origin fish coming back into the.
So, give us some time, too. We haven't been doing it that long in the Middle Fork. So, give us some time. We've got to be a little bit patient here and see what we get for returns.
Yeah.
You might be surprised.
I hope so.
Surprised in North San Diego what's going on, I think.
That'd be a good surprise.
All right, can we take a little break?
Yeah.
Yeah. What is it, 10:30?
There are people that do.
We're going to take a break on the phone, folks, for until...
So if you get...
Oh, gosh, I don't know.
30 natural origins.
About 6-7 minutes. 4,000 so we'll see you in a little bit.
Stocked upstream, and you take 30.
Yep, time to stress a little yoga.
Break the equation, you get one fin back.
Have some cookies.
What if we get
some health food.
Then there's a question.
Yeah, so give us some time.
Is there a restroom on this floor?
It takes
right out the door there, Drew.
We do so badly. If we had a place to put them, I'd like to hold them until September. And wherever you drop them, they're going to lay eggs.
Okay.
And then you'll actually get production. They all die before they spawn. But you could do the Brighton Bush thing.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking it was probably 3 or 4 years. I think Tony Amandi was testifying that, you know, if you take these same fish and you put them up at the Willamette Hatchery and you bathe them in formalin and you inject them with antibiotics every week, you know, on ICU. And they stay alive till September. Wild fish, they die. And so if we just keep them alive, they're going to die anyway, but they just can't handle it. So we fill them full of antibiotics till September and then run them upstream. And you can save the genetic material that way.
Okay.
But we got to... Maybe Peck turned off. He needs to do adult holding pond.
Yeah.
We know there's more issues
He does, but that's... I know. What he's got is unsatisfactory, but that's all with burn. He's got money.
Show me the money.
The core. Well, see, that's nicer. I could just say the Army.
Love the Army.
Yeah. Work with the Army. Navy officers in the department heads. Back in the Pentagon, and then they have the Army guys working with the staff. Why is that?
And the reason?
You gotta get it done.
Ah!
Army likes committees, like meetings.
How did you know that?
There was a really cool article written in the Navy Proceedings. It's a professional journal back this 25, 30 years ago on a guy. Postgraduate school down in Monterey had written this thing, and there was a personality type that you could track back to services.
Mm-hmm.
And it really was based on their life. You know, and you found that Army officers liked to do everything in committee. They wanted to talk about it. They were great team players because when they moved 50,000 people. Air Force officers were business managers.
Look at all that wasted energy there.
Yeah.
The Marines
build a dam there.
Followed all the rules.
Give me an order. I'm
tunnel. Good. Yeah. You're Navy right. Guys, they didn't ever ask anybody. They just operated independently. Because typically, you're sent off. You're the only guy out there. And if you need something, you go do it.
Mm.
If it breaks, you fix it. Then you ask for permission to do it later. And so they tend to be loose cannons.
My dad was a Navy guy.
No,
he wasn't a loose cannon. He was a naval flight surgeon.
I've
got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
You've
got
nothing to lose.
These new destroyers they were coming out with, 10 years ago, I think they finally put one online. Down to about 90 people on a destroyer.
So really?
50. That's about 350 feet. Inshore combatants, lots of guns, lots of electronics, everything's monitored. Over there, there's remote sensors.
If you send me that document, I will then put it to the table.
Surgery via
then we'll send it
video teleconference. Yeah. The surgeon is over here. The guy operating on is the 22-year-old.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
The intern. Yeah, the intern.
Your
really?
List of action items you guys have is ridiculous.
Wait, is this right?
I saw
it. Look at
any of the ones with my name.
On OPB one time, they did an appendectomy on somebody down in the Antarctic. Video teleconference. They were locked in. They couldn't
get them out of there.
So they were out there to die. But it was video teleconference.
I've seen some of those shows on the end.
I feel down there. It would feel better.
Versus a
human. Scared. Too much coffee. It's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that bad.
It would be cool. We used to send guys down every year to resupply. That's my contingent of his Navy cargo handlers.
Yeah.
Reserve units. We'd go down to the South Island, load the ship out, go over and offload it on the ice. in the summertime, I guess it was, for them. That's the only
way
to get in.
Why?
And then
why, Tim?
Yeah,
my phone. Can you turn back on? Oh, is that your phone? Their phone?
Mm-mm. It's their phone.
Even in the summer, it's just, oh,
I can't even imagine.
You can't turn the engines off.
I can't even imagine.
You really can't.
I'm trying to call in. I want to hear what we're talking about.
We had a guy killed down there one time. It was, I think it's 35, 40 below. It cooks the pad eyes on the deck of the ship. The cables were hooked down, pulled loose. One of them actually broke out of the steel.
Should I just unmute it?
Yeah, I guess unmute it, but I don't think that's
what it is. 50 feet over the ship. Oh. You know,
that's what it is?
Yeah.
He was dead.
That's
obnoxious. But, you know,
it's dangerous. Way to go, man.
That's what I always tell the guys. They don't need to be out there.
Don't go out.
Don't be standing around looking. Because, you know, the cable's breaking. They cut people in half.
Oh, I never thought about that.
It's dangerous.
Sounds like no fun.
How are you doing? I'm good.
Good, good.
John's beating me up, but, you know, I'm just taking it.
You can't. You know, it's not just argumentative.
John, I asked that question.
I bet it's been 6 or 8 years we keep thinking, you know, the money is tough. You know, I see that the Army is dealing with some budget issues. We've been fighting those same budget issues for 10 years. You know, it's just barely speaking by and moving on.
This last budget, they increased the O&M budget for the first time in a long time.
For the R&E?
No,
they increased it.
Yeah, overall.
The research chunk, actually, we were hacking this around, I think this was last year, and the research monitoring piece actually got plussed up about 20%. Mm. The rest of the stuff, I think, was pretty
at some point, the reality is we're going to increase the O&M budget.
But
otherwise, you keep trying to put some infrastructure in place. You can't do any of the work you need to do.
If somebody give us, we need to win the lottery. Maybe we can have everybody go out and buy a ticket.
I think we're going to start seeing at least the decline level out and maybe even go up a little bit here with the O&M.
Nice.
What they're really trying to clamp down on is the new construction.
Dexter get put on the shelf.
Yeah.
Yeah. I assume there's going to be no money for that.
And here's the thing is, if we don't have any Army demonstrating that there's potential, I think it makes the case worse for that. So I think they're careful.
They need to do is show them a video of that resort. There's no fundamental way to fix that without completely rebuilding that facility.
Yeah.
We really should have done there is push
that sun with their hands.
That's
sun.
That's blue sky.
That hoppers.
Dealing with two new roof leaks at our house in Vancouver over the weekend. That was after we had two other ones.
Or at least come up with
an alternative way. Same company.
If you're working with Hazard Origin Fish,
right early,
you don't have to do the water.
Called this company, they came out and tarped the roof.
Use it the old way and make it cheap.
At least
you make it
work. And I've actually told them, I think you just leave the tarp on.
It's in the back. No one can see it. Very wild fish.
We decided finally, I told my wife, just had to bite the board.
You've been a mental.
It's been 14 years we've been throwing fish. It's rough.
That's way slow.
But if you find out about you guys, bitches.
There's some things.
And the wind doesn't help either because it pushes it up on the shingles. So my mom and dad over on the coast, they went through like four straight years on a new building. It was expensive, but that was 15 years ago, and no problem.
Our neighbor just we have a beach house out in Long Beach, and our neighbor last summer was we put on
metal. Yeah,
and
it'll be even better.
I heard somebody I was talking to said that guy really spent the same amount on that roof as his entire house. He leaves for 3 months during the winter, and he doesn't want to worry about it.
Chasing what he's doing now.
Yeah, we tried to get out to our house. We're going to go out there this weekend. Yeah, 16-mile-an-hour winds out on the coast. I don't know what our house looks like.
Compared to talking to Greg about...
Keep my fingers crossed. It's not.
Not only how it's going to work, but just the attitude toward the new system. I mean, Greg was just fighting the whole thing and chaining it.
Great. A couple more minutes, or another minute or two. What do you have? One more facility to go through for this, and then
sure.
We're timing wise, we're in good shape because on the agenda we're pretty much caught up or ahead of time.
Did you have anything else on your agenda after this?
Yeah, we're going to do some discussion about some summer steelhead topics,
and then we had
fish health. Sarah's going to talk about fish health a little bit.
Okay.
If there's anything to talk about.
This has to be a...
Are you going to send this out?
Absolutely going to send... Well, Cameron, you had asked me not to distribute it initially.
Well, I thought we were going to be able to distribute it to the people who were more interested rather than a blanket distribution.
So we got a table started, mm-hmm. and we'll try to integrate everything in this list
into the table
format.
Right.
Then we'll send it to you.
Right.
To work out
and start it.
Okay.
That sound good?
That sounds good.
And then once you got that worked out.
Do you know who you're talking to?
Yes. What did you call her? The angel of mercy or something?
Angel?
Yeah.
So what about.
Ahead of time. So we don't have to make a mistake for 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay.
We're going to have to go to PNNL, Normando, U of I.
Yep.
Who else gets to look at this?
Are they all on your distribution list?
This needs to be informed by everybody who's doing the research in case we're not thinking of something. We try.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
We're not going to catch everything. Yep, exactly. They might have an interest, but
I think they're all
right.
So the one thing I thought of, too, on the...
I better look at the contact list just to make sure.
Mark,
I don't know who
they get a natural origin Oomycetes ascending the ladders there, too. Do we need to be sampling those?
That's a dexter.
No,
both Minto and...
We moved back up river.
We got a ton of rainbows this year at Minto.
And I think you guys may have something you guys are working on along with the Genizer. So,
well, we still feel that we'd like to get a better sense of genetic structure of all micros throughout the basin.
Okay.
And so, that's one way to collect samples. The best way, of course, is through some systematic sampling.
So we want to add that to these?
Tentatively.
It's a good placeholder.
Okay.
That would take somebody being there to take a DNA sample and sequester it in a vial, basically, with our system. Yeah, it could be done. It would have to be something we'd add to the hatchery staff often. Because if there's no steelhead moving and there's no Chinook moving, my guys are going to do something else.
I don't know. We should ask Grandpa.
No. surveying and stuff like that. So.
Hey, Greg? Grandpa?
Yes, sir.
How many rainbows did you guys pass above Minto this year?
Trying to pull that up as you had asked that collection. Almost 300.
It's not trivial. Well,
almost 250 whitefish.
Yeah, killer whitefish. It's over.
I couldn't tell you if it's the same rainbow kept coming around and like the water line or not.
You need to old purple plant.
Were they losing scales each time?
It only makes sense to sample all of those fish. That fits within the context of some sort of systematic sampling design, right?
Yeah.
So it doesn't make sense to take every single sample there and then miss some and then somewhere else. It's anecdotal, right? I mean,
I could do a caudal clip if you wanted me to do it.
You know, similar to that, we got lots of samples at the Lieber bypass, right? And so that provided us with a large sample set on the Mackenzie, but is that necessarily representative of what's going on throughout the Mackenzie? No, it's not, because it doesn't capture resident Oomycetes that weren't out-migrating as smolts. And so in this case, he'd be collecting lots of samples from rainbows, but that, again, isn't particularly representative.
It's opportunistic, which is one of the criticisms of the previous work.
Right. And so it provides an opportunity, and that's great, but you seize upon that opportunity only if it fits within the context of a systematic sampling design to capture the...
So
where does that leave us?
If we were able to do that work, we could incorporate that as part of our study plan.
Maybe.
I'd leave it as a placeholder.
Is Cotton going to get back on what time? Is he
there? He's not until 1:30.
Oh, 11:30?
Yeah, he said he wouldn't be able to play.
11:30. So we're going to sample him for now?
Placeholder.
Sorry. Are you guys on the phone able to follow this discussion?
We're going
to
start.
Yeah, I know.
Not really.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Maybe we need to make a decision.
So when does sampling start?
Anytime a fish comes in, they can come in at any time. They're swimming around.
So you guys are passing fish right now at Minto. How often are you running the trap right now? And we're gonna see the spawning migration here soon. So with the rainbows, right?
Yeah. Well, this is apart from what I planned on. It's a year-round exercise. If it's one fish, you still got to sample it. Then if it's 10 fish, you got to sample it. If I don't put somebody
on
station,
is it something Greg's staff
would have to work it out with Greg's staff? And I'm hesitating to add more stuff because we're already painting his.
It's a lot of samples protocols to be taking if you don't even know if you're going to use them.
Right. So given that uncertainty, maybe we should put down. Maybe we should go ahead and collect one out of every 10 fish, so we get a subsample, and then if.
Sampling is one out of 10 fish. Somebody comes up with a brilliant
opportunity
idea.
Allows when they're already there working, or is it they make a special trip to or a special to get in there and collect?
No, it's in Rainbow. What are we talking about?
Yeah, Rainbow.
I just throw.
And what's going to be easier for them to track every 10th fish and sample, or just to punch them all and then you subsample them?
You can't throw them in the freezer, Greg. Don't do that. DNA samples.
I mean, a lot of these rainbow are in the 3 to 4 inch category. I mean, we're not talking monsters.
Oh.
Well, I don't.
Okay, really, seriously. Just because we get a fish 4 inches long, we're going to. No, I was thinking you were talking adult sized omicus, not every omicus they get.
And we did see a few cutthroat. I didn't really keep track of those, but we do see a few of those. And most of the rainbow are small, I would say under 6 inches. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, I'm not sure they might be winter sealants.
Yeah. I say no until somebody says that they've really got an idea in mind. So let's not add extra work that doesn't have some tangible benefit.
And we might know fairly soon if we're going to be able to proceed with our Omicus genetics work. So most of you know, I know Bob knows, Bernadette knows, that we're trying to get that work funded through ODFW and other sources. We've got a proposal in that's going to be reviewed in March, and we should know something about it by April, something along those lines. So we'll have a better idea of what we need early this spring.
Okay, so take it out.
What did you put in?
Yeah,
take it out. I mean, if it was just going to be a placeholder, then you could add it as a separate placeholder. Consider Omicus sampling in addition to the steelhead.
So add it as a placeholder here?
Yeah, I think
so. It's a separate placeholder so that it doesn't look like it's not matched with something we will be doing.
All you people standing up are making me nervous.
It's more comfortable
standing
for me.
Go ahead and stand.
Fish.
Just those with bad backs or standing.
Just happens to be on the ground.
Yeah, later. Agenda item of.
Try acupuncture.
15 studies, right?
It's been helping me.
Really?
Yeah.
There's a lot of meat.
Quacks.
Sorry. All right. So we were on Middle Fork. Anything else? Middle Fork, Dan, you're on the phone again?
Yeah, sir.
Let me just run through this list now, and then you can tell us if we're missing anything, maybe. So we can try to capture it before we send this out for review. So number one, start out plants early. 12th of May could be an issue for ODFW to open it before 19th May to accommodate U of I. Assistance provided by Corps of Engineers and U of I. And sampling these fish, and then we need the details from U of I. Sorry, that's kind of confusing, but it makes a lot more sense when you read it. number two, 100% DNA sampling for hatchery origin Chinook outplanted above Lookout and Hills Creek. Subsample 100 fish for scales. And related to that is number five. I'm just going to jump down to that. We need to revisit the scale of outplanting. Maybe I should use a different term there. It's kind
quantity.
Of a bad pun.
Quantity.
Size. Size of outplanting effort by examining different levels and different levels, in other words, numbers of fish, and different return rates and their effects on power of analysis. So Cam and Mark are going to talk about this, is that right?
Sure. And we need to coordinate with you guys.
Okay. Who'd be the point of contact on that?
Mark.
No, but
for us. Agency. I thought Bob was talking about the fish benefits work.
How about Fenton, since he's not here?
Well, if Fenton's Middle Fork, Fenton and Bob, throw us down.
Okay. So number three, 100% scanning of Chinook for coded wire tag, and these fish go to brood or are killed and sampled. All natural origin Chinook to brood, and this is a big question mark. Tom's going to check with ODFW management on this. But for these, we want to sample and record sex, get a scale, DNA, and pull ovulus, right?
Right.
So is Dan going to need to do that for any morts in the brood that are natural origin?
Dan, in the past, I think you put them in the freezer and my guys sampled them afterwards. What happened last year?
Correct. That's what we've been doing.
They like that. Frozen, dead, stinky fish. They like
frozen. Nice.
Good fellows.
Cool. Number six, 100% pit tag scanning of returning adults, both Chinook and winter steelhead and summer steelhead. Note RT tagged fish and P3 common. So
how does that work with, okay, we get a pit tag detection of a non-radio tagged fish. We won't know that it was a radio tagged fish until after it's been uploaded to Patages.
Right, so that would be up to U of I to search the query and see how many of their fish were detected as pit tag fish returning to traps where they didn't have a radio tag.
Okay, and as a backup for that, I've asked Paul to be the one that's in charge of tag recoveries of all types from our surveys and hatchery sampling.
And uploading the data.
He's uploading the data automatically.
That's the critical component of all that pit tag stuff. Is right. It doesn't get uploaded. It doesn't exist.
That's what we've got in place right now, but that means that U of I folks have to do the uploading to Patages of their, and I'm assuming they're doing that. Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
So one action item tied to this item number, Dan, is Tom's going to look at any infrastructure improvements to help you with the pit scanning. Nothing fancy.
Okay, one question I have is, what are we doing with these pit tag fish?
Should we have it like coded wire tag? They either go to the brood or killed in?
I think it's fine to get it go to Brood. I mean, there's it's going to be a very small number.
I mean, or does it matter? I mean, you have
in
all
that
the
case
data.
We already have the information.
Yeah, right.
So it doesn't matter. Yeah.
There's nothing you need from that. Well, no, we could treat it with as a fish you want to get some scale samples from.
We'll know the age.
Well, so, you know the life history, or I don't know. I'm just. What else can you glean from fish that you know when and where, when you could tag it and where you released it?
Yeah, scale.
So if I say standard disposition for these fish, would that be all right? Or do we need additional sampling for the.
That's what I was thinking scales from them might actually be good because you get an idea of ocean entry and things like that in addition to age.
So 100% scales on these?
I'd be inclined to take Golden's too.
Golden's too.
Just because of what Gordon's got going on. It's not hard. It's a very small number of fish.
Okay.
And we're already odorless sampling 60, 70 fish there anyway.
And hopefully, there's just a bazillion of them,
yeah.
And we get overwhelmed with little ear bones, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Overwhelmed with ear bones.
So, Cam, we're taking these as brood in?
I think that's a good idea.
We're going to take odorless down there.
No, we'll take them as brood and we'll get them as odorless, just like it will treat them just as if they are natural origin fish you're taking in a brood.
Okay.
This is going to be kind of confusing, but we're going to help us straighten it out.
Right? Well, yeah, if we're going to take them as brood, it just adds another truck for those days we're out playing.
Okay.
Because you got to have another truck sitting there just for.
Damn.
Of course. Just kill them.
Yes. Yes, we could just kill them. If it's not a brood day, we're just going to kill them. Same as you.
For a coated wire tag.
Same as you would for a coated wire tag. If it's not a brood day, the coated wire tag fish are killed and sampled. Same with pit tags.
That's fine.
And.
Except you want odorless out of those days.
My guys are there for those days, so they will take odorless.
Because they'll already be chopping snouts.
Right, they've got up to their elbows in gore.
Okay. Any other big holes we need to fill there, Dan?
No, sounds like a plan.
Okay, thank you. Mackenzie.
Yeah, I got a question, a couple questions about that. What has the Army Corps had in terms of guidance from their own legal staff on discussing Mackenzie issues when it becomes part of the public record? Have your lawyers talked to you?
No.
Nothing?
No.
Really?
They should have.
No.
Has Ian talked to you?
No.
Because they should have talked to Ian.
We have a little sheet that Ian gave us at that last team meeting. But it's just
talking
basically,
points?
It's
or
just
non-talking
basically,
points?
No, it's just basically like recording things for the public record.
Yeah, that's all we've heard is it just be... Keep a good administrative record of whatever conversations take place.
Yeah, we have a similar sheet. Don't destroy anything.
But no, I mean we have no kind of gag or anything
like
that.
Told us not to discuss anything, or
well, they certainly told us to be very cautious about what we discuss when it gets into the public.
If it's for public record, so yeah, our concern here is what's going to become public record from this meeting.
We've got a recording of the whole meeting. We've got a something will be added to it.
But we haven't been told not to have these discussions with you.
In fact, we're encouraged to keep doing that as much as we can.
That's right.
So yeah, it's your meeting.
I'm not an attorney, so I don't know what we're going to do by speaking to this issue at Mackenzie.
Okay.
Can't imagine we can get ourselves into.
Well, there's certainly some of the material is easy to talk about. There's no problem at all. For the Mackenzie hatchery, I guess we're going to be proceeding as if everything went well last year. I think it did. We're going to sequester some fish on site at Mackenzie hatchery in case the cougar trap operations come up short. So those fish would be outplanted late in the season. That seemed to work last year. Question, should we be sequestering both males and females, or would it be just females?
Well, the current disposition plan calls for both in different ratios. So maybe we should just capture what the disposition calls for.
Okay, and that's our last agenda item for your meeting, is what the disposition is going
to
be?
Well, it was just kind of to review. The 14 disposition tables already been put together and sent out, so I thought we could sort of a refresher.
Okay.
If we even need to, if we have time. But we've got that, and we've got that already.
Right, so it's the same target, a minimum escapement of 400 females and 200 males.
Which is what we captured in the McKinsey HGMP that we just submitted to NIMS.
Okay, then my question is for you, Kurt. Are we expecting mostly coated wire tagged fish back to McKenzie this year? I'm sorry, I lose track. Is this the year we don't get 100% coated wire tags? First year?
Oh, right, because we stopped.
I think you might be right on that.
Maybe.
Well,
I'm not positive either. But
if only 5-year-old fish are 100% coated wire tagged, in order to outplant them, we would have to be outplanting coated wire tagged fish, which
kill them, then outplant them.
I'll take the obelisk too. This gets to the
last year that we 100% coated wire tag was with the 2010.
2010
brood.
2010 brood. That means that they're going to be 100% coated wire tag this year.
Yep.
Fours and fives.
Yep.
All right, then I get into the algebra again. If I want to know what our tag sampling rate is, and McKenzie's got a lot going on with size and time of release. Those are fish coming back now, and we'll be outplanting fish that have wire and not sampling it. So that's a problem for me.
So should I just add parentheses here, all coated wire tag, except for cougar supplements?
Yeah.
So would you like me to take all coated wire tag fish that are tribal stuff, selling fish?
Yeah, unfortunately, starting this year, we really do need to get 100% coated wire tag recovery as close to it as possible, even though I know a large portion of those tags are not informative. They're effectively blank wire.
Mm-hmm. So would you even put any of those in the cougar supplement holding?
If that's all we have.
That's all we have.
That's all we have. If they're all coming back wire tag, then and we want to outplant live fish.
If they don't have one, they're probably a Middle Fork straight.
Something, or a lost tag or something like that.
And if the last blank tags were put in the 2008 brood.
Yeah, but wasn't the 2010 brood the year that there was a confusion where coded wire was used across release groups, the same code? So that's just like getting blank wire. It's not informative. It's not associated with a particular release size of time.
Let's see here. I think that was done last in 2009.
So the 2009 brood, you think, had the inadvertently mixed up coated wire. 2010?
Yeah, let me open this one in 2010 here in a second.
How many, Cameron, how many distinct tag groups did you have in 10? Or did you think you had? Was it three? Or more?
I don't remember. It's at least three. It might have been five. Depending on whether we tag different ponds.
So Tom, are we scanning for paired release fish here?
Yeah.
I need to take some of this fish to the coast.
I see you have paired release and other.
Hey, in 2010 we had
scan them all.
Three distinct tag groups.
Okay.
Okay, we need to do a time check here because the Willamette Valley staff have been patiently waiting on the phone too. So should we maybe
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Table their trap discussion. Have them fill out the table.
Okay.
Since it affects the other hatchery managers less on the phone, but go through the same process with them kind of offline.
Okay.
Did you hear that, Chad and Doug?
Yeah, that works.
Okay, sorry, guys.
Oh, no problem. That's the awesome way to do it.
All right, let's crank through the McKenzie, and then we need to leave a little time for other agenda items because it's already 10 after 11.
Okay, well, then the only other significant issue on the McKenzie I want to add into the discussion today is trail bridge oak plants. We've never DNA sampled them, I thought, but apparently early on there was some DNA sampling. I want to readopt that. Small number of fish that get uplanted by trail bridge.
Hatchery
yep. Ocean fish. We're adding that to the protocol just because it makes sense. That's it. My guys will handle that, Kurt.
I think that's 100. It's 100 fish, I believe.
60. For those trail bridges.
That's it. 60.
Yeah, DNA sample. We'll sample the trail bridge outplants the same way we sample buff cougar outplants.
Okay.
Anything you know of for U of I in this sub-basin?
Not off the top. Okay. I'll check with Chris later.
So, Doug, Chad, are you still on the phone?
Yeah, we're here, Greg.
Maybe we should cover the cougar trap while we're talking to McKenzie here. So this is McKenzie okay. Hatchery. Unless there's other stuff for McKenzie, or do you need to go on to...
What time?
We
12 o'clock. 12 o'clock we have to be out of here.
Okay. So
that's the absolute latest.
I guess we'll
latest.
Table that, guys. So this concludes...
Hi, hey, Brett. This is Brett.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I just had a real quick one for, I don't know, Cam, but it sounds like we're going to be doing a lot of additional wanding of fish at the trap, and I know Fish ID had kind of put out an email asking if we wanted some of the newer wands, because I know our wand, we had a lot of snouts that didn't have tags this year, and I suspect it was that wand. If you shake it, if you move it the wrong way, it'll beep, and, you know, anyway, they've got a better wand out now. And I was wondering if you'd heard any more about us getting those wands and if that's going to happen or what the status is on that.
Yeah, we got one, but I'll try to track down a second one that'll be devoted to your facility. So you'll have.
Hey, Cameron, this is Doug. Did you get one of the Thor's hammers, the yellow ones?
Yeah, Thor's hammer. Really useful.
Yeah, we're really pleased with ours. It, you know, again, it detects ferrous metals. It's great. It's kind of too sensitive, but you don't have to stick it in their mouth.
Right. We like it too.
Okay,
you pound it in pen
sticks. Make sure those are going to be available, because I know that's been a complaint of Fish ID is getting a lot of snouts that don't have wire in them.
So, hey, Doug.
Yeah.
Who would be a good point of contact for the Valley staff in making sure you guys have all the equipment you need for the Harmony?
Catterize. He and I run the adult facility.
Okay. I'm going to put you as the
We typically coordinated with either Mike Hogan or Cameron to get all the vials and the gum cards and stuff for the scales, so... if that works, Cam, we'll continue to do that.
I think it worked great this past year. Very clean data, no missing samples, no problems.
Okay. You had mentioned earlier that...
Wiggle my car.
Double exploit tags. Did your crew find quite a few fish that were missing tags? Or?
Yeah, we're missing a tag, and you found, I think... two or three on the ones that
we got two out of 17 fish that returned a second time that were missing a single tag.
Right. So we use that and the tag loss from fish on the spawning grounds to estimate what the probability of losing one tag is, and it ended up being about 20%, which sucks.
And can we crosswalk with the parentage stuff?
Yeah, so we saw some fish, some duplicate genotypes, fish that showed up later in the season without a tag.
Without any tags.
Right.
So...
that fell back over Foster and without tags.
unless they're closed.
Okay. Hey, guys, thanks a lot.
I
found this pretty useful myself, and hopefully we're adding value to the group here. So the plan now is the core is going to work up a table, sort of integrating all the information from this list, sort of in table format more. And then we'll send it to Cam, and then also probably Caudill. And the core Valley staff are going to help us fill out items for Cougar and Fall Creek, and then we'll circulate it to the group. So,
and I'll attach the forms for actual physical data collection in the field.
Yeah.
So that everybody who might have an interest, so U of I, Chad, Doug, anybody, can look at it and say, well, just capture the material they need, or they need to add fields, whatever.
So that'll be the forms. Can you also capture equipment needs if there are, I mean, Brett was just talking about needing a wand. I mean, if there's something.
It's yeah, that's part table.
Of it. Is it on the table?
Awesome. We'll have a column in the table for equipment that's needed for all the different samples.
Okay. Oh, that's great.
So, great. Hey, thanks a lot, guys. Yeah,
thanks for the forms, Cam. We were wondering about that, even if it's a subset of our data or an extra set of data. That'd be great.
Okay.
I'm going to save this to your desktop, Dave.
Okay. Messing with my graphic.
So, Cam, just so we're clear here, do you want us to continue then to double ploy tag the fish after September 1st, or...
I guess I didn't get that.
Further, or is it more of it?
We'll either double Floyd tag or pit tag. If we go okay. Universal pit tags everywhere.
But you should still have a secondary mark, right?
Full caudal clip.
Or a Floyd and a pit.
We could. Separate yeah, we need a separate. Otherwise, they'd have to scan for pit tags and then look up a pit tag protection to see if it's efficient. Executive decision. You guys are buying the pit tags and you're applying them, so yeah, keep doing. Or Floyd tags. For Cougar, stick with Floyd tags.
Okay. And, I mean, you know, we could lower caudal clip or something, too, if that would be a benefit or another sin marking.
No, I think with double Floyd tags, you're doing all right. It's going to be very rare that you lose both.
Okay.
We done?
We just began.
All right, good. Great job, everybody. Thanks. Thanks, Griff.
Yeah.
Sarah, are you still on the phone?
Yeah.
All right, that's great. Thank you. Do you want to just give folks around the table and on the phone a quick update on any fish health issues since you were kind enough to sit on the phone for the last 2 hours, 2.5 hours?
Sure. So there's... a lot of places there's not much new that's happening, but a couple places there are some changes. At McKenzie, starting from December and then January and February, we've had just a few ponds that have popped up with cold water disease, and we've successfully treated that with the work on the call using an INED. And the last pond when I was just there, I think a week ago, I did see some EIDS, which is a viral syndrome that affects the red blood cells that often coincides with the cold water space. And that's not new. This has happened at McKenzie for the past several years. Kurt, do you remember how many consecutive years you guys have had to treat with cold water in your Chinook?
Kurt, you on the phone?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that question.
I just read that in the past several years we've had to treat your Chinook for cold water disease, and I don't have the record open, but do you have a feeling for how many consecutive years you guys had to do? Is it just like the last three or four?
Yeah, it is certainly the last three and possibly four.
Okay. So, I mean, that's happening, but it seems to be under control with the antibiotics. Leapers, no current fish health issues. Dexter, the summer steelhead, have been doing great. The Chinook are doing okay. Right now, there's something happened. I'm going to go to Dexter on Friday to see. They had a slightly increase in mortality, but they also had a that's happened at that facility. The fire looking good. There's no shelf issues. South Danian fish are looking good. The two problem places have been Minto and Marion Forks. And this is a change from previous fish health records that we have, both with Minto going above, and then at Marion Forks, there was, they weren't able to have the weir in, so adults were able to get into Marion Creek. And both facilities this year have had pretty consistent detections of bacterial kidney disease in the finish. And I feel comfortable saying that it's from the fish passing above, because both fish, any of the brood are in the culling program. So the females are screened by ELISA for BKD. So I don't think that this coming in the eggs, I think that it's from exposure of fish going above. So it's kind of been a no-level chronic loss, but it is a change. I looked at Tony's records, and he had only seen, like, one clinical BKD lesion in, like, the last 15 years at Marion Forks, whereas now, the last 2 months or so, whenever I look at dead fish, it'll be, like, 5 out of 8 that have very obvious bacterial kidney disease. So I guess just let you all know that as far as fish returns or things like that, I was talking to the group yesterday. This kind of low-level disease might impact some of the fish survival or fish coming back. We don't know what that's going to be. When we assess the pre-liberation juveniles, we'll look at a bunch of healthy fish and look at those for the pathogen level. We'll see what the kind of hidden pathogen level is in the fish out-migrating. But they're being released.
That's great. Thank you. That was a very succinct yet complete summary of everything going on. Can you just back up a little bit to Dexter? You were talking about a sewage spill. What was that about?
That was, so I wrote this last week, so I guess now it's going on 10 days or more. I think that it was 10,000 gallons or something like that of sewage that had gone into Dexter Reservoir. And according to the news, they were saying, well, once it mixes with the, 10 million of the water in the reservoir, that it shouldn't affect much. But it is odd that at this time of year, we're having some slight increase in fish loss. And when I talked to Tim just this morning, he said typically this time of year we don't see. And he was saying that it was fish with some flares, gills. It sounds like it might be a parasite issue. But I haven't had a chance to look at those fish yet.
Yeah.
Well, just to add to that, Dave, it was 100,000 gallons of raw sewage that was out of Lowell's treatment plant that their pumps failed with that snow and freezing rain and stuff that we had here a couple weeks ago. And their phone lines were down, the alarms didn't call anything, and so it pumped on sewage into Dexter Reservoir.
Yeah.
Dan, I knew that I was messing those details up somewhere along the line.
Dilution is the solution.
Greg, remember, you're still on the line? All right, so let's get the weir in on Marion Creek.
Yeah.
This year we weren't able to hit safety issues and water flows, and you know, it's going to come back to kill us, because I mean, like I, Sarah said, we've never had BKD, maybe one fish in 20 years, and this year it's really high. That's something we're going to have to address structurally, put in some sort of seasonal weir. Where we have the weir in previous years, the channel kind of changed from the winter. It was just too deep and swift for us to get in there and put that lead in and then put the pipes in. So we'll have to try to figure out something.
Yeah, and I'll say too that in the juveniles at the pre-liberation, we had really little production by the ELISA for several years, but it might be 10 out of 60 fish that we get a really low level on. Whereas now, at least the fish that I've looked at that have been dead, once they have a lesion, they would definitely be considered high pathogen loads. So we'll just have to see what the result results are to see how different the proportion and infection intensity is for this year.
Okay, thanks. Any questions for Sarah? That's great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Is this an appropriate time to talk about Steelhead here, Bob? Is Chris going to be available?
I can ping him, see if he's going to hop online.
Okay, I had on the agenda just to briefly go over a couple of items related to Summer Steelhead. One of them in particular was the plan for 2014 for the off-station release. We've been hearing that,
off-station release.
The off-station releases, and we've heard that they've been terminated for 2014.
So I spoke to Jeff McMichael at length about that, and afforded him the opportunity, if you wanted to have an experimental off-station release, but it doesn't make any sense to him if we're not going forward on that into the future. So he's going to double up the tagging of volitionally released fish from the hatchery, which, frankly, sounds like a better idea because it increases his sample size up to a point that detections would be more useful. He didn't seem to have any horrible problem with that. It still gets us to the active tagging migration detection of the steelhead that will be released from the SAMEM system.
Yep. So there's no off-station releases planned for the south,
north
SAMEM?
North or south SAMEM.
Neither SAMEM.
That, as it stands right now, it's based on preliminary analysis of Elise's analysis of the creel data, which he's not finished with. We talked about that already?
Several times.
She's not done.
Bob talks with her quite a bit.
Didn't talk to her. What I was talking about is we talked at the last Steelhead Workgroup meeting. We talked about the data sets we were going to look at. After the science review, we're going to get together. This is one of the data sets we want to look at. So I was trying to get it presented at the science review. But okay. I thought it was appropriate. It would fit in well with the other information that was being presented there.
Right.
And she
said
it's not ready yet.
No, it's not ready yet. So she's working on it. I talked to her about it yesterday, the day before. They went together. And she's working on it.
Yeah.
When she gets a draft together with Josh McCormick's input, then it'll come to me. I'm going to add in a review of the earlier material from the 2003-2004 creel survey data. In fact, give it a historical perspective.
Okay.
And then at some point, probably late spring, it'll be distributed for review outside of the agency.
What is that older creel data also related to these off-station releases?
No, it's on-station releases, so it's trying to compare it to some apples and crab apples going on there. But, but we agreed in the proposal to the R&E board who funded it that we would take a historical perspective to look at it more broadly than just an experimental release of fish in the North and South Sandia.
So will that work continue then?
No, I don't think so. I think we're done. In terms of the off-station releases, it has to be a pretty compelling argument to do that. In my opinion, this was sort of a suck year to really try to do a creel survey to get really, really strong, solid results because the run size was so low. So there's certainly an opportunity to look at it into the future if we get a good design and with a predicted decent return.
Yeah, that particular group doesn't like to fund multi-year studies either, so that's another thing we've run up against.
Right. Which group is this now? Sorry.
The R&E board?
Our Internal Restoration and Enhancement Board. Small grants.
You throw acronyms around like we do.
Hey, you do that.
It's a license, excise tax for restoration and enhancement of ODFW programs. And they would much prefer hard structure construction pieces and single shot pulses as opposed to run a program that ought to be funded by ODFW. Since ODFW doesn't have the money, then we got to go over there and try to find money for it. They don't like you guys.
We've learned that.
We're loved by so many.
One of the discussion items that was captured in that Summer Steel had a meeting that was back in July, I think. I was out of town, but it sounded like there was a couple pieces of information we were kind of waiting for to then help inform the next steps, next discussion, which was supposed to take place, I thought, the beginning of this year or sometime. Because that meeting in July, I think the outcome was, hey, let's have another meeting in 3 or 4 or 5 months. One of the things we want to wait for is the CREEL data to see how that helps inform things. So it sounds like that's not quite ready yet, but it's ready enough to give ODFW a sense of direction as to whether or not
we should do it in 2000. We should do it in 2014.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
That's not the call of anybody in this room. That's a district decision. Management makes that decision, so they call the ball on that. And I'm passing it on.
One of the things that is within this group, though, is we were supposed to set a date for after the science review. We talked about getting together, reviewing. So there was the recycling data. There's the other adult studies data, getting together, sitting down, and looking at the other ways in which we're going to manage differently if we are. So we should at least try and start penciling out a date for that.
Yeah.
So when are you guys going over FY15 priorities? So we need to try to integrate that into the R&E process.
That's typically in the spring, isn't it?
That should have been this meeting.
FY15. Still winter.
Yeah. But, I mean, just funding-wise.
So right. That's what we're doing at Fish Passage Team in Harmony.
Funding-wise, as I've been informed by Byrne, he only has money to fund baseline monitoring evaluation for the hatchery program. So when I heard you earlier mention that there was a little bump up in the O&M, that surprised me because I haven't heard that at all.
That was for the 14 budget.
Yeah.
Just came out of Congress.
But you review the baseline program and say, okay, here's what
yes,
we did, and
yes,
then
absolutely.
What? Maybe there's things you don't need to carry forward. Maybe from the results, there's things you need to add on.
In fact, we talked.
Aren't you at the 5-year review point?
That's where I was just going right now.
For the comprehensive plan.
Yeah, we've got that monitoring plan that was put together that said every 4 to 5 years we would sit down and review cumulatively all the data that's been collected, the results, the analysis, and what is it telling us. And I'm pretty sure that review should be done at the end of this year. And that's
what's the venue for that?
You say what or where?
What is the venue for
that? How does that review
take place? I don't know. We haven't done it. So, you know, we should...
This would be the first one.
Yeah. Figure out how we want to do that.
Sorry. I can't do it.
You know, along those lines...
It would be a special... Hatchery team meeting or internal core WCAM meeting workshop.
There needs to be some legwork done ahead of time to,
clearly
to prepare materials for folks. So you don't just want people to come in. But what do you think?
No, we were even talking about the idea of using Chuck Pevin to help maybe facilitate a meeting because he was the author of that Harmony plan. Maybe he'd be a good person to help facilitate the discussion of those results. So that's something we talked about a little bit. Hasn't gone anywhere more than just a little brief conversation.
Well, this is Lance. This is what I've heard. Tidbit from Steve Marks that said that they're still working on compiling all of that information, but we haven't seen any of it yet, but hopefully shortly.
Could you say it again? I don't know if we all caught that in the room, Lance.
The latest update I got from Steve Marks on kind of the summaries of the summer steel data from last year and previous years was that they're still working hard on it and expect to get something that they can share shortly.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Gotcha. And along the lines of the summer steel, ODFW changed their policy. Was it just in 13 in terms of the recycling, right, where... South San Am has a different protocol regime. So did Minto facility. I was wondering how that all played out, and if there's somebody, I don't know, Caudill or who, I don't know who can speak to that.
Chris, are you on the phone?
I didn't hear any new.
He
bodies.
Said he was on the phone. Yeah, there is. Oh. So I think maybe just a review of the recycling data that you presented at the science review. Is that kind of where you're going?
That'd be great, yeah.
Are you prepared to speak to that?
It could be pretty high level.
It can be in a moment. the data that we've got for last year's tagging is still in process because those fish are swimming about yet.
You bet.
But if you give me a second here, pull up the numbers.
You should come to the fish passage.
At Foster Den, we radio tagged 100 of those fish, and they were released downstream at Waterloo, Pleasant Valley, and Wiley Creek. To date, a small proportion has exited from the South San Juan, a few percent. A few have no records other than their tag records. About 10% have been reported as angler recaps. The majority of those, probably about a third, have either stayed in the South San Juan and are still there, or they were recaptured at Foster.
So 30% are still swimming about, presumably, and 30% were recovered at Foster and euthanized or something.
Mm-hmm. Taken out of the game.
Yeah, somewhere in there, 30% to 50%, and about 30% to 40%. But there's a lot of squish in these numbers because, again, those fish are still out and still in progress.
That's helpful.
And it's really helpful because the hatchery managers weren't allowed to attend the science review, so I don't even think they've heard these data yet. And then, you want to speak to Dexter as well?
So the one result out of this that we found somewhat surprising at this stage is that the angler recap rate was as low as it was for the fall. So those tags had a $25 reward, and if lots of those fish were being taken out and anglers had any incentive to get a little bit of cash, or if they had some goodwill, we would have expected quite a few more recaps than we've received to date. And so then at Dexter, we recycled 50 steelhead, and to date, about 40% of those have exited the Middle Fork downstream. A very small percentage in the neighborhood of less than 10% have just tag records. Less than 10% of those have been returned from the fishery with the same reward program. And to date, about half of them are still somewhere in the Middle Fork below Dexter in a tail race.
And Chris, we know male females from our tagging pretty well, right?
I believe so, yes. Yep, should.
And then we can cross-correlate the downstreamers with how many are hens to look at potentially kelting rates.
Yep, sure.
So.
And we can have an expected kelting rate based on what we saw in the summers, which should be pretty low.
So you should see if there's any questions on the phone.
Yeah.
I've got a question on that.
Go ahead, Lance.
Yep. So that 40%, Chris, that you cited leaving the middle, was the timing of his exiting consistent with, like, post-spawning, or was it, you know, pre-spawning?
It would be spawning because the fish were tagged as summers last summer, and they'd be spawning now, or soon. And so they're based on that from those through very early January. So it's unlikely that any of those would be post-spawn events at this stage.
So not to move backwards, but...
And again, I really hate any numbers right now because, again, this is a very preliminary analysis.
But these data don't, Chris, if I'm correct, answer Dave's original question as to how the changes in the recycling program might have affected angler catch or anything, because we don't have any before
look,
right?
We have some data from the 2012 tagging, and so we would be able to make a comparison with that year. But yes, otherwise that's correct.
Yeah, and that my question actually was a little bit more directed towards Brett. I was curious to know how the new changes in the recycling protocol affected his removal of fish and things like that. So I was hoping to get a quick update from you too, Brett.
Oh, basically what we saw was we thought we removed more. Had a 55% return rate of the trap. So, and it didn't seem to matter if those fish were recycled once or twice. So anyway, it seemed to affect the fishery because we removed, we weren't recycling as long, and we were recycling fewer fish the month of July. So basically we just saw, later on the season, we saw fewer fish because there were fewer reruns that we were recapturing. And it was hard to tell. We had to, we had to shut the trap down 1st of October, so we weren't able to usually you do that little bit of a push there at the end in November where you kind of get the last of them, that I think you're going to catch. We weren't able to get our hands on those fish this year just due to the inability to operate the trap.
So I'm just looking at the disposition table for 14, and I think it's the same as 13. And for summer steelhead, it reads recycle all new fish in half the reruns until July 1. Then recycle half new fish until August 1. After August 1, cease recycling. Is that the program that you did in 13?
As of right now, there's some options being discussed, and we're still kind of waiting on some of that creel data, and just basically we'll make a decision, on that here for the final.
But that's what you did last
year.
But
yeah, right now that's kind of the game plan.
Yeah, and that is the program you did in 13, though.
Yeah, that was what we did in 13.
Camera.
I think what we're looking at now is just trying to, basically get a handle and try to kind of get some numbers to where we know what, get a better handle. I guess what I'm trying to try to quantify what we think we're leaving out there, and base our decision on And the piece that we're missing right now is the creel data.
How were the anglers dealing with that new program? Were you getting a lot of phone calls or having to manage some of that?
We got some, and then just a lot of just kind of running into people, keeping us here at the Hatchery. But it seems like the boaters seemed to like the protocol because they wanted more fish earlier on. But it definitely we saw more complaints from the boaters as the season progressed.
Yeah, kind of balance those different
and
needs.
Basically, we saw just a pretty large just kind of dropout, in participation in the fishery as it went on.
Cameron, did you get this data from Brett, or just ultimately you use this in any of your analyses?
No, Elise's.
Yeah, there's a lot of pieces to the summer steelhead program that, and maybe that's what Steve's working on. Though it'll all come, he's pulling it all together. See what the bigger picture looks like. Anything else for Chris while you got him on the phone?
Did you want to circle around again to just?
Do we have time?
Chris.
Yeah.
So we gave a bunch of assignments to you.
Yeah, thanks for getting on the phone.
So you proposed about 125 fish to be held at South Santiam. I came up independently with a proposal to do 300, and there was no real decision, but because of the obvious permitting requirements, it's going to come up. What was the meeting, Griff, that you wanted to make sure it was elevated to?
I don't know, Fish Passage team. I don't know.
Normandy.
I don't know if it'd be a. I think it would be either of those two. I definitely need a regional forum on it, right?
Yeah. You want to know is that.
And I think the Armony meeting on the 27th is the right one.
We should check with Lance, see what his thoughts are on it, since he's on the phone.
Yeah, Lance, initial thoughts on how we should approach outplanting, delayed outplanting of unclipped fish from the foster trap.
Delayed outplanting of foster from foster trap. What species?
So Chinook held for a couple of months.
Sort of the number that I came up with, 125, and that was partially based on the logistics of what my crew is likely to be able to handle, and sort of a minimum number to start to get enough recoveries on the spawning ground to test for that treatment effect. More is better, of course. So we expect the recovery rate to be in the 15 to 20%-ish range.
Correct.
So, ideally we have more than about 200, so if the ant can help out.
So I thought about, with 300...
For getting a sink.
Chris, we're trying to adopt 100% pit tax. Chris, we're trying to adopt 100% pit tax. 300.
that would give us a pretty good single year estimate of the treatment effect. If we the lower we go, then we start to move towards needing a couple of years to get a large enough sample size, and then internal variability and all that will depend.
Chris, I was wondering, so the interest there,
those are the kind of
is to look at pre-spawn mortality of those fish, right?
Right, and the aim is to ask whether or not if you hold fish at a cold water facility during the warm summer months and then outplant them near the time of spawning rather than immediately outplanting them, does that reduce pre-spawn mortality?
So are those numbers for females or for fish? Are you trying to get estimates of pre-spawn mortality for males?
That's a good point. Probably the thing to target, at least for the hatchery health numbers, would be females, though it might make sense to do both.
So I think...
I hadn't really thought that part through.
The issue summary here, though, is what we're basically talking about doing is delaying adult passage for natural origin fish at foster. Right?
Correct.
So, and There's two sides to this.
But
we're delaying.
Holding fish in what we believe benign conditions. Delaying them would be not collecting them. So I'd be careful about how you use that word.
We're not passing them. It's delay. But the two sides of the coin are, what we're trying to develop is some sort of management alternative that we can use where we think we're going to have a really bad year for pre-spawn mortality, right? So that'd be a question.
Pulling them down is not.
So this is where.
If you anticipate a really bad year because the client predictions say it's going to be hot, can you take the fish and put them in a benign condition that is known cool water, known conditions, and delay the outplanting of those fish until near spawning and improve over summer survival?
But this is where it's critical to get input from the management agencies on how they see this management tool. Is it going to be a useful management tool and something worth pursuing where we're talking about potentially impacting a third of the run at Foster? You know, I'm on the fence with it. I could absolutely see where this could be very important, you know, especially if we have a string of hot, dry years together. And the fact that, you know, that was part of the design of these facilities is these new facilities at Minto and Foster is adding that capability should we choose to use it. So before we choose to use it, it would be good to know what it would do. The tricky thing with doing it at Foster is we're talking about using natural origin fish. So it's going to be more representative of what would happen to a wild run, but you know, if it doesn't work like we think it will, you know, then we're basically where we, I don't know, we just need to think about the potential impacts here, right? And if we do,
I considered just folding it into the North Santiam, but the problem there is that there's some awful beautiful, cold, clear water up in the North Santiam, and you typically have low pre-spawning mortality up there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it occurred to me, obviously, we could try a nested experiment where we try to get redistribution of the spawners and look at pre-spawning mortality at the same time. But it only works if you've got pre-spawning mortality. And we'd expect to see that in the North or in the South Santiam.
Yep. It's a more useful tool for the South Santiam. Absolutely. And for other places like Dexter.
And so one of the, you know, one possibility is to have a relatively small pilot in the first year of the operation of the facility so that, yeah, I completely agree with Dave that there's a trade-off between risk to the resource and statistical power. And so how big a sample you want to try to apply this treatment to in 2014 depends on where we're collectively comfortable with sitting on that spectrum. And so one potential decision would be to treat this as a pilot during 2014 and have a relatively small sample and make sure that facility is going to operate the way we think it does and there's not some issue with pathogens or operations and we don't kill a substantial proportion of the run.
This is Sarah. I don't think whether you test this on, you know, a natural origin group or a hatchery return, the pathogen loads are probably going to be equivalent and the effective temperature is going to be pretty similar. I mean, no matter which group of fish that you do it in. So this is me being new to the system, but as far as the timing of moving the fish, you're saying, like some people were saying earlier, to delay moving it or just to hold it. I mean, is there, what other cool water options are there besides holding them at the Foster, his Foster facility?
The other option is the second treatment that we're evaluating, which is to directly outplant fish to the reservoir where they can use a hypolimetic thermal refuge.
Mm-hmm.
And the aim of both of those is to basically reduce the degree day thermal exposure during the summer holding period to reduce the potential energetic costs and disease expression trajectory long enough for fish to spawn.
And so then my next question will be, but again, because I'm still new with this facility, for any of the natural origin fish, there are hatchery fish that they'll usually end up getting tank treatments or formula treatments to try to hold off, you know, external pathogens and fungus. Are the natural origin fish treated similarly, or are they literally just collected and then kept in their raceway or, you know, pond until they're transplanted?
That's an excellent point, because the facility design, in order to treat fish, you can do a formalin treatment without handling them. But if you need to inject those fish, they need to be run through a fish lock, which when we designed it, it was intended for brood fish or hatchery origin fish, not for natural origin fish. And we would have to get close coordination with both NIMS and ODFW on the use of that facility feature for natural origin fish, because there are some real potential risks of that fish lock to fish. There's a bulkhead there that could squish fish pretty easily.
When we don't
we haven't re-injected our Chinook adults in many years here, and we've had no disease issues because of that. So we typically just, well, we always re-inject our broodstock at the time of collection, so we can inject the natural origin fish at the time of collection as well. Yeah. And then we don't, and then usually after August, we usually don't inject them anyway because they're so close to spawning.
So we gotta wrap things up here. Dave ran out of the room, but the core people are about to turn into pumpkins. If we don't make this 1 o'clock meeting, you'll never see us again.
Because you won't be able to prevent.
I think. Yeah. So let's go ahead and wrap this up. What's the path forward on this? Where do we want to coordinate this regionally? Lance, any thoughts on that?
Well, I guess I'm kind of with you, Griff. I'd rather go slower rather than go full bore on it. I understand, more is better, but in this case, there's not really a critical need, and we have, a lot of NORs in the South San Diego. Things are kind of working there, so I hate to put more risk on wild fish than we absolutely have to. So I kind of tend to go back to a lower number of fish and try it out as a pilot.
Well, I'm all for proceeding. I think we just need to be adaptive and make sure we get clear feedback from Brett on his comfort level with how the facility is operating and whether or not we want to go forward. I just want to make sure we clearly think it out and coordinate it amongst each other. I'm just kind of playing devil's advocate in a way. I see it as a useful piece of information. I just want to make sure that, the management agencies are in agreement on it. So
it seems like the RMNA team it's related to research. So.
Okay.
I agree. And one of the things that I hadn't really thought about is the fact that this is the first year of the facility being open, and the inevitable hiccups that go along with that disease or operation or water flow related is something that we need to put into the risk assessment.
So
one thing for everybody to collectively think about is how much relative effort to put into hatchery hold versus reservoir release kinds of treatments. So as potential strategies.
So let's do some prep work to bring this before the RM&E team and add it to their parking lot, right? And then we need to get back to Brett and this team with our recommendations for this experimental disposition. Sound good?
Yep.
Okay, can you add that as a...
In the short term, what I need is the maximum number that people would be comfortable doing, because I need to get the permits in.
Okay.
And the best way to do that is to put the maximum number of everything that we might possibly want, even if we back off later and then don't do that much, because then everything's in place. Otherwise, it creates administrative headaches to try and get an amendment if we change our minds later.
Yeah, that's a good point, Chris. This has been a great discussion, but we do have to wrap up here. So I think I'm going to, unless there are any final thoughts about this discussion, I'm going to close the meeting and simply say that we will be getting these meeting notes out to you guys as soon as we can. Please review these and the previous December notes, and feel free to add to, et cetera, send us comments on edits. With regards to the table that Griff was working on earlier, we may end up sending that to a smaller group of folks who are really more embedded in this issue than the larger team, but we'll figure that out. And anything else I can think of, we'll make sure we get out to you. And as Griff reminded me, if we do think there's some research needs for hatchery work in FY15, we certainly should identify it. Everything I've heard from Byrne is that there's no funding available because it's going to be O&M related, but it doesn't mean we shouldn't identify these things. And then again, there's that gray area with anything related to hatchery fish going up above. I mean,
there might be some overlap where we can coordinate.
I like coordinating. That's good.
Okay.
That means I maybe. But hey, thanks everybody. I appreciate you spending the time on the phone, and it's been a good meeting. So we'll talk to you all soon.
We put it.
Lance, are you still there?
Thanks for the room.
Are you in your office or did you go to the meeting? I'm at my office.